KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
This is AMEN, the Alpha Male Entertainment Network. In the cigar city of Tampa, Florida, USA. Welcome to the Cigar Dave Show, your weekly excursion into the world of cigars, spirits, and diversions. The cigar and pleasure-friendly hotlines are open. 877-DAVE-007. Now, fire up a cigar and pour yourself a cocktail. It's time for the General Cigar Dave.
It has been quite the tumultuous week between the coronavirus fears that are stretching across the globe, the financial markets that melted down. Talk about volatility. Volatility, an understatement. Well, the good news is, as alphas, we shall meet today and we shall congregate and do what we do, and that is enjoy a cigar, enjoy a libation. We will talk about the current events of the day. We'll talk about coronavirus. I want to talk about President Trump, what he had to say about China's President Xi. My good friend, President Xi of China. We'll talk about that. And in our bottom of the hour, we've got a very special guest, Tom Golisano, founder of Paychex, formerly owned the Buffalo Sabres, philanthropist, with a new book that just came out, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. I had the chance to speak with Tom earlier this week at length. Fascinating, great book. It's an easy read. It's not one of these books that you're going to read and, you know, in 5 minutes your eyes are going to start drooping. Very conversational, very interesting book. Light, bright, and tight, just exactly the way I like it. Had a great conversation. And those of you that are fellow alphas, that are entrepreneurs, business people, professionals, you will find what Tom had to say quite interesting. We have had a great conversation. As always, I extend to you my Long Ash Leap Day greetings and salutations, a Long Ash snappy salute, Semper Delectatio. Always pleasure, even in the midst of quite the crazy week. Make America great again. Make masculinity great again. Keep America great. Screw the enemies of pleasure. Screw the nanny state. As always, it is your global five-star general and alpha male in chief from Command Center Alpha. Now, we're going to do something a little bit different because we're going to get to Tom Golisano at the bottom of the hour. Long conversation with him that I know you will enjoy, and I do want to get to what President Trump had to say in the coronavirus and some very important things that we as Americans need to be straight up about regarding China. So before we do that, let's change the pace a little bit, shall we? And let's conduct a national
with an unlimited and secure supply of pleasure sticks available for the general to enjoy. It's time for National Cigar Litation Maneuvers.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. And the reason I'm doing my Johnny Cash impression and playing Johnny Cash, Ring of Fire, is because my cigar today has Johnny Cash roots. It is the Jericho Hill. It is part of the February Crowned Heads full-flavored sampler. Full-flavored selection of their great cigars the La Imperiosa, Juarez, and Jericho Hill, dedicated to the man in black. Hello, my name is Johnny Cash. Jericho Hill traces its name to one of his great songs, Cocaine Blues, from his renowned concert at Folsom Prison, the ballad of a scorned man named Willie Lee, whose drug-induced rage got him arrested by a sheriff from Jericho Hill. And Crown Heads uses music as a lot of their inspiration for their cigars. Great cigar, square-pressed, beautiful stick, the first Nicaraguan cigar from Crown Heads. Beautiful, dark, deep, chocolatey, Mexican San Andreas Moron or Maduro wrapper. Nicaraguan binders and fillers, medium to full flavored attitude. It is a delicious cigar. It is just feeling it in my hand. This beautiful Robusto size just has a nice solid feel to it. Oily wrapper, 5 inches in length, 56 ring gauge, which is 56/64 of an inch. But it doesn't feel that big because, again, it is square pressed. That is the cigar that I will enjoy today. From the February 2020 Officers Club selection, the Crown Heads Full Flavored Sampler.
Cigar altering and highly sharpened leaf exposing device.
Oh, yes, my self sharpening double edged stainless steel guillotine ready for action.
Maximum BTU flame throwing and heat producing apparatus.
You can hear the 4 jet flames coming off of my Cigar Dave breakout from the Cigar Dave Labs. Last week was the first time I had a cigar in 6 weeks after having an upper respiratory infection, bronchitis. So the R&D laboratory guys said, we've got a new lighter for you, General. It's called the Breakout because you're breaking it out for the first time in 6 weeks. Nice big tank. Listen to those flames. That's what I will use to damn my Jericho Hill. My
cigar pre-lightation checklist complete. No faults detected. Area clear of all enemies of pleasure. Approval to go throttle up in 3, 2, 1.
And a perfect seg to Johnny's next song.
I hear the train a-comin', it's rollin' around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison.
That's right, puff and rotate, doing my Johnny Cash impression. This is delicious. Dark, delicious. Medium to full flavored attitude. Nice chocolate notes, espresso. My buddies Mike Condor, John Hubert, Crown Heads have done a magnificent job on their lineup. True artisanal cigars. The other two cigars that were in the Officers Club selection, the La Imperiosa, a nice full-flavored beauty, Ecuadorian Habano Oscuro wrapper, very peppery, and then a cigar inspired by Jericho Hill, the Juarez. Amps up the strength, delivers notes of spice and sweetness, but this Jericho Hill, magnificent, and that's what I will enjoy today. Now I need something to accompany it.
Scotch, bourbon, and beer. Commence thirst-quenching libationary maneuvers.
I'm opening up a 32-ounce Crowler fill from Dunedin Brewery. Mike Bryan and his great team, we have had him on many, many times, a beautiful boutique brewery. Over in Dunedin, near Clearwater, right across the Cigar City, right across Tampa Bay. And I need something that's going to accompany this nice chocolatey espresso-type Jericho Hill. So I have pulled out from Dunedin Brewing their Beach Tail Brown Ale. 5.8% alcohol by volume, notes of roasted chocolate, caramel. So look at this, got a deep, dark color to it. I will say cheers, take a sip. Take a puff of my Jericho Hill. Take a sip of my Dunedin Brewing Beach Tail Brown Ale, and I am ready to go. Fantastic. Wherever you are, make sure your cigar is lit. You've got your libation at hand, because now I'm going to get into some serious conversational maneuvers. I want to talk about coronavirus. I want to talk about China. I want to talk about the United States' dependency on China. I want to talk about what President Trump said during his press conference on Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's talk about, first of all, China. I believe nothing, not a lick that is being released by the Chinese commie government. Not a thing. I don't believe them in terms of the number of cases. I do not believe them in terms of the number of deaths. To this day, they have not allowed the World Health Organization or the Centers for Disease Control, which both asked to come in and assist with containing the virus and assist the Chinese. They have both been rejected to enter China. Why is that? And why did China kick out three Wall Street Journal reporters who were on the hunt talking about coronavirus? Why? Very simple. Because the Chinese Communist government has done everything in their power to suppress the truth about coronavirus, to suppress that it even existed, to suppress the facts, and then, in fact, they have endangered the global health of the, really, just global health of people worldwide. They have not only endangered global health, they have endangered global economies, global transportation. There's a reason the stock market, it was getting toppy the last few weeks, make no mistake. And we may have seen a couple of percent correction coming down. But no way would we have seen the dramatic 10, 12% absolute rolling crash that we saw earlier, or actually throughout the course of the last 5 days. This is all because the Chinese Communist government, the Chinese Communist leadership, refused to acknowledge the truth. Communism will kill you one way or another, and this is one of those ways. In December, an ophthalmologist in China made the discovery of coronavirus, saw something was unusual. In a posting to several other doctors, I think 8 or 10 doctors, he mentioned this. Mentioned that what he discovered. It soon started to spread, started to leak out. And instead of the Chinese government contacting him saying, "Doctor, tell us what you see. If there is something, we need to contain this. We need to know what is going on." Instead of doing that, the commie bastard party officials called him in, dressed him down, and made him sign a statement saying that he was being a little bit on the dramatic side, that he was exaggerating what went on and there's really nothing to worry about. Everyone else knew the truth. This was in December. This could have been stopped in December. There's no way China now is sequestering, is quarantining an area the size of France. Actually, the area the size of Florida, the population of France, I think 60 or 70 million people. If they knew damn well that this wasn't as bad as it is. So the Chinese government, the Chinese commie pinko bastard, starting from President Xi of China and all the other commie bastard officials, knew what was going on, endangered. I don't care if Chinese people are endangered. I don't care about China. I care about the United States. China is our enemy. Now, I don't wish evil or harm on any of the Chinese people, with the exception of all the Chinese commie pinko bastards. I hope every Chinese communist party official not only gets coronavirus, but expires from coronavirus. And I know some of you are saying, "General, you're wishing ill on people." You're damn right. The Chinese communists endangered every person in the world with this. They have been suppressing their people for years and years. I don't care about the Chinese Communist Party officials. I don't care about President Xi. I don't care if they all drop dead tomorrow from coronavirus. In fact, I hope they do. The Chinese people are different. They're being suppressed by these bastards. But China, the Communist Party officials, knew what was going on and refused to acknowledge what was going on and endangered the entire world. Now let's go to President Trump on Wednesday. He was asked about China. And President Trump, who, as you know, I'm a huge supporter, make America great again, keep America great. I will absolutely vote for him in November. But the one complaint I have is that at times President Trump gets too optimistic, too buddy-buddy, whether it's with Xi or Putin or Kim Jong-un, whoever. What he should have said when asked about it, he should have said, "I'm going to be very clear. I do have an excellent relationship with President Xi of China. But President Xi and the Chinese government, the communist government, has endangered the entire world. They knew about this in December, and they suppressed it. They've known this has been a major health issue. They're not prepared to deal with this properly. They have refused to let in the World Health Organization. They have refused to let in the Centers for Disease Control. They have refused to let in medical professionals, disease professionals that are fully cognizant on how to contain and how to research and how to watch these things. They have been negligent in allowing them in. They are responsible for allowing this to spread because they have tried to keep it quiet. And I don't believe, frankly, and this is what the president should have said, frankly, I don't believe the numbers that are coming out of China. I believe the numbers are far greater. And I'm very perturbed at China. In fact, I spoke with President Xi and let him, in no uncertain terms, he needs to let in the World Health Organization and CDC. That's what he should have said instead of, well, I believe he's doing a great job. No, he's not. President Xi is not doing a great job. President Xi and the entire Chinese communist apparatus has endangered the entire world. They've endangered China, and they've endangered the entire world's population because we're seeing it all over the globe. And now we're seeing it spread to the economy. And wouldn't it be something if the Chinese communist government falls because they refuse to acknowledge the disease early on in December, and their economy comes to an absolute standstill, and people in China are fed up and overthrow the Chinese communist government? Wouldn't that be wonderful to see? Screw these Chinese commie bastards. I hate them. I despise them. I hate all communists. And I hate these communists that suppress their people and suppress the truth about coronavirus or any other disease, whether it was SARS or anything else, that can endanger the rest of the world. Now, here are some facts that are very important. We have an unbelievable dependence on China. How our American companies have abdicated their responsibility and sent the entire supply chain to China, not only of computer parts and all the other crap that China makes, but more importantly, our pharmaceutical industry. 3M. Which makes the Post-it sticky notes that I have, but they are also one of the largest manufacturers of surgical masks and protective masks and painter's masks. Their plant is in China. Do you know who's commandeered all the production from that plant of the masks? The Chinese commie bastards. We have abdicated. This country, the CEOs, the government, has abdicated our economy, and essential medical drugs and other devices to China. They are our enemy. They could easily say, we're not going to be giving you any more medical supplies. Here's some startling facts that you should know about. 95% of U.S. imports of ibuprofen, Advil, made in China. 91% of hydrocortisone imports, China. 70% of acetaminophen, Tylenol, China. 40 to 45% of penicillin comes from China. 40% of heparin, a blood thinner, comes from China. And by the way, with the blood thinner, they were back in 2008, they had tainted blood thinner in China. In 2016, they discovered more was tainted, killed umpteen people. And in 2018, the FDA issued a recall of a blood pressure medication made in China, Valsartan, after it was found to contain dangerous carcinogens. China is dominating the manufacturing of raw materials of pharmaceutical products. 80% of all the raw materials for pharmaceutical products made in, you guessed it, China. You control the supply of medicine, you control the world. China can set the price, and every other country has no choice. I didn't realize this, that even pharmaceuticals for our animals, our beloved pets, 32 animal drug firms that make finished drugs or source active pharmaceutical ingredients in China, there are now six or eight of those drug firms saying they're having supply chain issues. We are at the behest. We are under the boot of China. Tamiflu, one of the most popular anti-influenza medications in the U.S., it's extracted from the Star Anise plant. It is a plant primarily grown and harvested in southwest China. Guess who makes that? China. That is correct. China, China, China. This is ridiculous. 80% of the raw materials for medications come from China. Oh, and here's another little thing. In terms of the FDA inspecting Chinese pharmaceutical companies, good luck on that. I just recently read an article that talked about how the FDA has a very limited number of inspections that go on. So we don't know if many of these medications are even safe. Now, you tell me, why can't we make raw materials here in the United States? Because it's more expensive? So be it. This is a national security issue. And this should be a wake-up call for President Trump, for the House, the Senate, for every government official, for the FDA, for the CDC, for HHS. This is not a political issue. Unfortunately, the Dems are trying to make it a political issue. How pathetic. Something like this is being turned into a political issue. This should be the type of thing where Pelosi and Schumer say, Mr. President, we're going to put politics aside. We're going to come and meet. We got to be on the same team with this. They could care less. They don't care about your health or not, the Democrats. They could care less. But this is a huge problem. Medical devices. 63 manufacturers, 72 facilities that produce essential medical devices. The FDA just came out, what was this, 2 days ago, saying essential devices may be prone to potential shortage if there's a supply disruption. Why do we not make all these devices and the pharmaceutical products in the United States? Enough is enough. Bottom line, China has threatened the world. They didn't have to do it with a gun, didn't have to do it with a bomb. They did it by hiding the truth about a virus. They endangered their own people, and more importantly, they endangered the rest of the world. President Trump should have come out and said, I'm not happy with China, and I'm not happy with President Xi, and I'm telling you right now, he's got to open things up because I don't believe one word he says. He didn't do that, and I've got a fault with that, a huge fault with that. Enough of the dependence on China. I'm fed up with those Chinese commie bastards. We can't make that nonsense, all the pharmaceutical products here. Please, this should be an issue of national concern and national security. And every president, every CEO that's just basically taken all their equipment over to China should be ashamed of themselves. Screw the Chinese commie bastards. Enough is enough. All right, next when we come back from the break, Tom Golisano, founder of Paychex Billionaire, author of the book Built Not Born, will join us. Great conversation. Screw China. They're rotten bastards.
The General is always on Twitter, delivering breaking news, giving you the latest intel on cigars, and battling the enemies of pleasure. Chat with the General now at Cigar Dave Show.
In 1964, Jose O. Padron began rolling cigars bearing his name in modest surroundings with one guiding principle: always focus on quality, never on quantity. Nearly 40 years later, Padron cigars are recognized for their superior taste and majestic construction. The result of Padron controlling all aspects of the cigar-making process, including planting their own seeds, growing and curing their own tobacco, and constantly supervising the rolling room. To Wall Street, it is called vertical integration. To the Padron family, it's called making great cigars. The Padron lines include the Padron 1964 Anniversary Series and the Padron Traditional traditional line. All Padron cigars are wrapped in Nicaraguan sun-grown Habano tobacco, available in natural or maduro. Experience Padron. For your Padron retailer, call 1-800-453-5635. When Padron is on the band, quality is a matter of family honor.
Surgeon General warning. Tobacco use increases the risk of infertility, stillbirth, and low birth weight.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
It's time to glow at the Redding Rancheria Community Fund 2020 Year to Remember. Saturday, March 7th at the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Since the inception of the fund in 2002, it has granted approximately $3.4 million to the local area. So come join us in celebrating the 71 organizations that the Redding Rancheria has been able to help with a surprise gift of $10,000. All proceeds from this event benefit the Redding Rancheria Community Fund, furthering the help the Community Fund does for our area. So come experience firsthand all the good the Community Fund does and support the tribe.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Cigar Dave is back in 5, 4, 3, 2.
As those of you know, I'm a big sports fan, being from Buffalo, Western New York, big Buffalo Sabres fan, Buffalo Bills fan. And while the Buffalo Sabres are having their 50th anniversary season, last week they honored one of the owners who came in at a crucial time for the Buffalo Sabres. They were in bankruptcy. Our special guest today came in, bought the Buffalo Sabres, turned them around, made the Stanley Cup Finals. A success story, not only owning the Buffalo Sabres, but for his other business ventures, including founding Paychex, which today does revenue in excess of $3 billion, started it in Rochester, New York. Now he's a noted philanthropist and a new author. Great book, picked up, couldn't put it down, finished it in two nights. Built Not Born, a self-made billionaire's no-nonsense guide for entrepreneurs. My pleasure to welcome Tom Golisano today to the Cigar Dave Show. I was reading a Buffalo News article before our guest Tom Golisano, who also founded Paychex, was heading over to the arena to be honored. He went over to the Buffalo Club and had a cigar, and I have found out that he is a huge cigar connoisseur. Not only successful, one of us enjoys great cigars, so it is my pleasure to welcome Tom Golisano to the Cigar Dave Show. Tom, great to have you with us.
Nice to be here with you this morning.
And let me ask you, I know that our mutual friend Larry Quinn said you are a huge cigar connoisseur. On page 4 of the book, you reference cigars, which we will get to. But talk about how you got into cigars and what cigars you enjoy.
Well, I was a cigarette smoker for a number of years, starting out when I was about 20, but in mid-40s I gave them up. But a few years ago, I was on a vacation with the family, and we happened to be in a place in the Bahamas celebrating New Year's, and my sister was in a gift shop. So I went in behind her, and I saw some cigars, and I knew my nephew was with me and my grandson. So I grabbed a few, and I said, I think I'll try one of these. Well, that was about 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't know if I'm an aficionado yet, but at least I am a cigar smoker. I enjoy them. I do specialize in Padrones, the anniversary series.
Great cigars. Great cigars.
Yep.
In fact, the Padrone family, our Jose O. Padrone, who founded Padrone, was just a great gentleman, and his two sons, George and Orlando, continue on their legacy and very much into quality. So fantastic cigars. You cannot go wrong. And actually, where you also have a home down in Naples, the Rocky Patel Cigar Lounge. Burn is right down there, another great place to get cigars. I don't know if you've ever been there or not.
Yes, I have been there. It's quite a location. Nice space.
Absolutely. Next time I'm in Naples, we'll absolutely have to get together and have a cigar. I want to talk about your book, Built Not Born. Incredible book. It's a self-made billionaire's no-nonsense guide for entrepreneurs. Tom, the one thing I loved about this book, it was an easy read. It was a conversational read. I didn't feel like I had to trudge through. I read this book in 2 nights. And it was, I couldn't put it down, just very interesting. And the first thing that I noticed right off the bat, which I think told me a lot about you, in the acknowledgments, the dedication section, you listed every one of your original paychecks partners and franchisees, which I thought was quite interesting.
Well, they were a very integral part of the growth of the company. All of them except one lived in Rochester, New York, and moved to various parts of the country to start a similar Paychex office. So they deserve a tremendous amount of credit. They're the ones that made it happen.
Well, I want to talk about before we get into Paychex, talk about your background. You grew up in Rochester, and you did not have an easy childhood. You really had to work, and you had. I was really impressed by the fact that you were so candid and honest in your book. You had a tough time growing up. You had to really help provide for your family.
Yes, my mom and dad had to go through bankruptcy when I was a teenager in high school. And it was a real tough time. And, when somebody comes to get the car and gets the car, it's a real wake-up call. And then they were also threatening to take the house. Fortunately, my mother's hard work and my father's determination, we made our way through it and were able to regain ourselves. But it was a very tough experience, for a teenage boy living in a suburban neighborhood like that. But we got through it, and it taught me some very important lessons. And the most important lesson was I wanted to always be sure that I don't get myself in that position. Because what it can do to a family and what it can do to your psyche is just overwhelming.
In your book, which I found was interesting, you talk about the fact that there's people think if you go work for a company, then you've got a guaranteed job and everything is cushy, and that's not the case anymore.
Certainly not. The cradle-to-grave mentality, cradle-to-grave security mentality, just doesn't exist today. And right in Rochester, New York, there's such an excellent example. Eastman Kodak Company was known for cradle-to-grave security for employees. Well, in 1982, they had about 62,000 employees in Rochester. Today, they have less than 3,000. That's what's happened to that organization, regrettably. But people that work there could not count on the fact that they were going to be financially secure. So it can be very risky working for a company. You could do really well as an employee, but if your department doesn't do well, or if your department does well, but the division doesn't do well, and so on, and the company gets sold out from under you or closes for some reason, you're really in could be in a difficult position. Owning a business has some real benefits when it comes to the fact that eventually you may be able to sell your business. You can't sell a job. And secondly, you may want to pass on your business to an heir, a son or a daughter, whoever. That's one of the real advantages of having your own business, being an entrepreneur. And in a way, it almost seems less risky than working for a large company.
Tom Golisano, author of the book Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs, the founder of Paychex. And in addition to being a successful entrepreneur, a business person, also a major philanthropist, which we will get to in a bit. Tom, before you started Paychex, before you were in the payroll processing business, you worked for another company, but you had some other businesses. You were always the entrepreneur type. You had some other businesses that you had founded, one kind of in media.
A company called Bidder's Guide. I was a salesperson for Burroughs Corporation, which back in those days sold accounting machines for accounting applications, similar to what PCs do today. And one of my prospects was a village outside of Rochester, and they wanted a machine to do water billing for their residents in their community. So I made a presentation. The town clerk and the town board members seemed to like my presentation. I was pretty confident I was going to get the deal. I was telling my branch manager about it. My branch manager says, well, make sure they advertise their bid notice in the local newspaper, not the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. So I said, what's that all about? He says, well, if they advertise in a local newspaper that's very unfrequently read, better chance the competition won't see it. So I went home that night and started thinking about all the products municipalities and school districts purchase and how many newspapers there were in upstate New York. If I subscribed to them all, added up or cut out all the bid advertisements, put them into a publication 3 times a week that I would put out, simply by mimeograph, I might have a product that companies would buy. So I decided to leave Burroughs and start a company called Bidder's Guide. Now, that was in 1964, I believe. I was at a public forum about a year ago, and two young men walked up to me and said, Tom, we own Bidder's Guide, which was the name of the company. I was astonished. I didn't know it was still in existence. And basically, these gentlemen bought it. It's a little different in its presentation today, using the Internet instead of mimeograph, but it's still going and obviously still has value. I sold Bidder's Guide to start Paychex.
Interesting. And they have adopted to the change in times and change in technology and still around 55, 56 years later, which really is incredible. Entrepreneur, sports team owner, philanthropist. That is Tom Golisano, and now noted book author. A best-selling book just released, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. We will continue our fascinating conversation with Tom around the corner.
You need to add some alpha to your Facebook newsfeed. By following The General, you'll get the latest intel in the world of cigars, info on the show each week, and see what The General is smoking. Click like at facebook.com/CigarDave.
America is under attack. Basic freedoms, privileges, and acts that we would normally take for granted are disappearing each day, including the simple ability to enjoy a cigar. This is Glenn Loop, Executive Director of Cigar Rights of America, CRA. At a time when elected officials should be thinking about education, public safety, and creating jobs, they are actually thinking about smoking bans, new taxes, and regulations of historic proportions on premium cigars. The cigars that provide us with pleasure, relaxation, and fellowship are under attack. We have to stop it. That's why Cigar Rights of America was created, to work for a new political day for cigar enthusiasts across America, to roll back restrictive laws and defeat onerous taxes and regulations that impact everyone from your local cigar shop to your personal humidor. For the price of a few great cigars, be a part of this effort to protect your right to enjoy a cigar without excessive taxation and cumbersome legislation. Go to cigarrights.org. Let's tell the government we've had enough. Join now, cigarrights.org.
The Cigar Dave Officers Club has been en fuego, on fire with marvelous selections, and we continue that trend for February. We feature a full-flavored selection of Crown Head's unique artisanal quality cigars. First up, the Jericho Hill, dedicated to the man in black. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. Jericho Hill, the first Nicaraguan cigar from Crown Heads. It's wrapped in a Mexican San Andrean Maduro wrapper. Rich, dark, delivers medium to full-flavored attitude. Then we feature the La Imperiosa. Buckle up. It's a seriously full-flavored beauty. Ecuadorian Habano Oscuro wrapper ignites massive notes of pepper. And then we wrap it up with Juarez, inspired by Jericho Hill. But Juarez amps up the strength, delivering notes of spice and sweetness. $22.95 per month. You get three great cigars like the Crown Heads full-flavored sampler. Go to CigarDave.com, click on Officers Club, and join the Officers Club today.
This is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to an stay with no more homeless pets.
Listen here, you little twit.
Matilda the Musical is the story of an extraordinary girl who, with a sharp mind, proves that even if you're little, you can do a lot. Inspired by the genius of Roald Dahl, Matilda the Musical is packed with high-energy dance numbers, catchy songs, and an unforgettable cast. Children and adults alike will be thrilled and delighted by the story of Matilda. The Cascade Theatre presents Matilda the Musical, March 20th through 29th. Tickets at cascadetheatre.org or 243-8877.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Special guest today on the Cigar Dave Show, Tom Golisano, founded Paychex, noted philanthropist, owned the Buffalo Sabres of the National Hockey League for 8 years, and I picked up his brand new book, Built Not Born, a self-made billionaire's no-nonsense guide for entrepreneurs, just released. Couldn't put it down. Before you did start Paychex, you worked for you were a salesman for EAS, Electronic Accounting System, which was a competitor to ADP, Automatic Data Processing, which still is around today. And what I found interesting is they both went after the same market, the larger type accounts. But tell us the story how you went to the library and did some research, and really that was the seed to found Paychex.
Being in sales, and they eventually made me sales manager, you know, driving down Main Street anywhere in the United States, you look at businesses and you got to say, gee, most of them have less than 100 employees. Well, the companies doing payroll processing back then were specializing in that market. The larger the employer, as far as number of employees goes, the more they sought after or tried to get that business. I just got to wondering, you know, how big is this small employee business market? And I went to the library and found out 95% of all businesses in America have less than 50 employees, and 98% have less than 100 employees. Well, all the payroll processors in those days were completely ignoring that market. Now, probably the rationale was the higher the dollar volume and revenue, the more preferable the client. But there's also the other aspect of that, and that's profitability. one thing that payroll processors do is they, when they price their product, the higher the number of employees or units produced, the lower the unit revenue. Conversely, the smaller the number of employees, the higher the revenue per employee. So with that logic, I said, would it be better to sell 10-person payrolls or one 100-person payroll? Well, the fact of the matter is the 10-10s represent 2.5 times the revenue. I can tell you as a payroll processor that the overhead to produce 10-person payrolls, is not 2.5 times. So they're much more profitable. The other thing that's unique is I think it's easier to sell 10-10s rather than 1-100 because all the payroll processors are going after that 100-person payroll while everybody is ignoring the lower end of the marketplace. Now, so we had to do a couple things.
Right.
When you had your payroll process back in those days, you had to fill out a fairly complex computer input sheet, which you had to learn how to do. Then it had to be delivered to the payroll processor, either by courier or by mail. My concept was, instead of having the customer fill out a fairly complicated input sheet, why not just have them call us on the phone? A typical 14-person payroll, which is our average size client even today, only takes about 2 to 3 minutes to call in. And the benefit is generally higher accuracy because the person communicating to us from the company is dealing with a professional that knows how to make the exact answer happen through our computer process. Secondly, and this was very big, none of the payroll processors back in those days were doing payroll tax returns as part of the service. For example, if you are an employer in the state of New York, you have a minimum of 52 payroll tax returns and payments that must be made to the federal and state governments. And the fines and penalties for not doing it properly and on time are severe. So we decided we would make payroll tax returns as part of the service. And the third thing, let's price it so small companies could afford it. High minimum charges back in those days from the larger processors was just too much money to allow small companies to want to take advantage of that service. So that was it. I went to the management of the company. I said, look, let's start a division. I'd be glad to run it. And they said, no, we don't think accountants would like us doing payroll tax returns. So I said, well, I disagree with you. And I took it back to them a couple months later, and they still were against the idea. The following Monday, I resigned and started Paychex.
Now tell us, when you did found Paychex, how much did you found it with? And you had some struggles along the way because when you're starting things out, it's not like you have a giant line of credit, and we know that banks don't like to necessarily lend to entrepreneurs or new businesses.
Absolutely, you are correct. I paid off all my debts when I sold Bidder's Guide, and I had $3,000 left and a couple of credit cards, which I quickly lost because I was unable to stay with the payment schedules, and the credit card companies retracted them. Went 4 years without getting my own paycheck. Fortunately, my wife at the time, Gloria, worked in a nonprofit organization, and we were able to sustain ourselves. But for 4 years, I can remember going home some days and looking in that refrigerator, and there's nothing in there. It was tough, but we made it through it, and it obviously all turned out to be worth it.
You know, whenever people say, oh, the person's an overnight success, I always say, yeah, about 6 years worth of overnights. And that's really true in your case as well, because 4 years without a paycheck that's pretty tough. I mean, that is very difficult. One of the things that you bring up in the book, which I found was very interesting, is talking about, are you cut out to be an entrepreneur? Because everybody thinks it's so easy to start a business. Everybody thinks no problem. And again, your story is a perfect example. You went 4 years without drawing a paycheck. I guarantee you, sleepless nights, a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. But there is a certain type that says, I am willing to roll the dice. And I always say, no guts, no glory. You roll the dice, you're willing. But you brought up something in the book which really resonated with me, where you said when you go out to, let's say, a restaurant, your brain works as an entrepreneur that you don't look and say, yeah, the food is great. You look and say, man, the place is busy. How many seats are in this restaurant? How many times can they turn it? What do you think the average food cost is? And you mentally go through an exercise figuring out what the business is doing and what kind of margins and profits and revenue it's doing. And I do the exact same thing almost everywhere. And I think that is a common trait with entrepreneurs. We're always looking at the business angle of it.
Guilty as charged. I still do it. I enjoy it. I think I learn a lot by going through the exercise all the time. And even if you get a chance to, even at a later time, talk to some of these entrepreneurs that you've analyzed from afar, it's really interesting stuff. And I think any person that wants to be an entrepreneur and has a desire, it's a good way to go through thought processes as they go from one business to another, you know, as consumers, for example.
On page 4, perfect example of this. You were in Cuba recently on vacation. You visited a cigar factory. Your first instinct was to ask questions. Where did they source their materials? What was their output? How many workers did they have? What did those workers get paid? You went through the entrepreneur's mental checklist. You started looking at the business aspect of it while you're enjoying a great cigar.
Well, they weren't giving me all the answers. They were sort of protective to a point, but I did learn an awful lot, and it was a fun experience.
Well, if you ever want to go to Nicaragua or the Dominican Republic, we can get you all the answers you want with our contacts, all the great cigar manufacturers, and see exactly how it goes from seed to cigar down the road. Tom Golisano, the founder of Paychex, entrepreneur, philanthropist, author as well, Built Not Born, new book that is doing very well on a number of bestsellers lists, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. Tom, I was amazed at just the level of honesty that you revealed in this book. And I really, chapter 8 really kind of hit me, a good deal for everyone. And it brought me to my grandfather growing up in Buffalo, who was in the wallpaper and paint business. And even as a little kid, and he loves cigars, I'd always go around with him in his truck and be just love being around the aroma of cigars and him. And I remember as a kid, I remember he did a deal with a bank, and we went in and he signed a loan to buy a property. And I'll never forget, he looked and said, always leave enough on the table for everybody to make it look like they had a good deal. Let everybody eat. That was his phrase that he used. And you did that. You said the exact same thing in your book.
Yes, I did. And I'm a big believer in that concept, that philosophy. When you're in a negotiation with, you know, a vendor or a potential acquired company or something of that sort, somebody buying your company, it's a much better world if you, as part of the process and the person on the other side of the table, understand that it has to be or should be a good deal for everyone. Or if it's a bad deal, that it's shared equally among the two parties. The idea that you can ramrod yourself and overwhelm the other party and take advantage of them, I think, is really a lot of baloney. Most people that are in the position to negotiate something like that are pretty smart individuals, and they've been through a lot. And if you think you can take advantage of them, I think you're making a big mistake. So if you want to accomplish something, the best thing to do is make it a good deal for both of you, if you can do that. Or if it's got to be a bad deal for whatever circumstances, at least let's share in it equally. I think you get a lot further ahead. You make friends and build relationships over time that are valuable if you have that mentality rather than the other screw-the-guy mentality. It's just better business, and it pays off in the long run.
We continue our fascinating, interesting conversation with one of the noted entrepreneurs in the United States, founded Paychex, also owned the Buffalo Sabres, noted philanthropist, and now has his new book out entitled Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. We will continue our fascinating conversation with Tom around the corner.
Hour one of the Cigar Dave Show is now complete.
There's time to refresh your cocktail,
as the General will return in 7 minutes.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRostra. Joe Biden finally won a primary, topping Bernie Sanders tonight in South Carolina with just under 50% of the vote to Sanders' 20% with about 90% of the vote counted. Biden dropping a lot of big names in his victory speech.
A proud Democrat. An Obama-Biden Democrat. Come join us. We have the option of winning big or losing big. That's the choice.
Former vice president dropping his ex-boss's name despite the fact that Mr. Obama hasn't come out for him or any other candidate that, from that matter. Mr. Biden rode a wave of the turnout of the African-American vote and thanked Representative James Clyburn for his help. $24 million in advertising in the Palmetto State could not produce the numbers to get him any delegates, and now Tom Steyer announcing he's suspending his campaign. He did not say who, if anybody, he would throw his support behind. The fear of spreading coronavirus has led to a global run on the sales of face masks, despite evidence that most people who aren't sick don't need to wear them.
Many businesses are sold out while others are limiting how many a customer can buy. Amazon is policing its site, trying to make sure sellers don't gouge panicked buyers. In South Korea, hundreds lined up to buy masks from a discount store. Rumors that toilet paper and napkins could be used as masks have emptied store shelves. In Asia, of paper goods over the past few weeks, people trying to protect themselves from the outbreak and medical centers alike are facing shortages. Patrick Frost reporting.
Governor of Washington State declaring a state of emergency today after a man died there of the virus, the first such reported death in the U.S. The health officials are saying he was in his mid-50s, had underlying health conditions. More than 50 people in a nursing facility are sick and being tested for the virus. News and analysis at townhall.com.
Bastian Gorka here for Relief Factor, the 100% drug-free supplement that was formulated by doctors to help your body deal with inflammation and pain. The reason I've told so many of my friends about the 3-week quick start is because as we get older, occasional aches and pains can be a real problem, keeping you from sleeping through the night or doing the things you love and need to do, like taking walks or playing golf, going up or downstairs, or simply playing with your kids or grandkids. Tens of thousands are now like me, glad they ordered the 3-week quick start for just $19.95. After years of back pain, I found relief, and I believe you could too. Folks, this is why the father and son owners of Relief Factor, Pete and Seth Talbot, created the 3-week quick start, and they discounted it to only $19.95. Approximately 70% of those who order it go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain, too. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384.
France is banning all indoor public gatherings of more than 5,000 people to show the spread, to slow, that is, the spread of the coronavirus epidemic.
The cancellation of large gatherings in confined spaces was announced by France's health minister after special government meetings. The health minister said public gatherings are being banned completely in the Oise region north of Paris that has seen a cluster of cases, and in a town in the Alps that has also seen infections. He also added, as of Saturday, France has registered a total of 73 cases, up from 57 on Friday. Of those, 2 have died and 12 have recovered. I'm Zaria Shackley.
The coronavirus outbreak is prompting the National Symphony Orchestra to cancel all its scheduled shows in Japan after scrubbing concerts in Beijing and Shanghai earlier. More breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. The man who created Trader Joe's markets with a vision that young, college-educated but poorly paid young people would buy healthy foods if they can only afford them has passed away.
Joe Colombe's family says he died Friday at age 89 following a long illness. He opened his first Trader Joe's in Pasadena, California in 1967, stocked it with granola, organic foods, and other items he bought directly from suppliers to keep prices low. There are now more than 500 stores in over 40 states. I'm Julie Walker.
The Jungle Cruise ride at Walt Disney World had to be evacuated yesterday after it took on water. No one was hurt, and the attraction in Orlando was reopened a short time later. Disney didn't say how many people were on the boat at the time or what caused it to take on water, but one passenger posted a photo on Twitter showing people standing on seats as the boat was filling up. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
This is AMEN, the Alpha Male Entertainment Network. Broadcasting from Humidor 1A in the Cigar City of Tampa, Florida, USA. Welcome to the Cigar Dave Show. Weekly excursion into the world of cigars, spirits, and diversions. The cigar and pleasure-friendly hotlines are open. 877-DAVE-007. Now, fire up a cigar and pour yourself a cocktail. It's time for the General Cigar Dave.
Well, I'm enjoying my Jericho Hill, part of the February Officers Club selection. Beautiful cigar, nice espresso chocolatey notes, and I am thoroughly enjoying my Dunedin Brewing Beach Tail Brown Ale, a perfect accompaniment to this Jericho Hill. And I'm pleased to say that after my opening monologue last hour, my blood pressure has gone from 950 over 820 down to a steady 120 over 80. All is well now. Getting just absolutely exasperated with China, our dependence on China. And if you missed what I had to say in the opening monologue, by all means, make sure you listen to our archive at CigarDave.com or on the podcast or on our mobile app. It automatically loops. You won't want to miss it. I was quite perturbed and fired up. Tom, when you started Paychex, initially you founded it just to be a local Rochester company. That was in the book. It was very apparent that you were just looking to make a nice business in Rochester. And I think when you look at many entrepreneurs that have become successful and ultimately billionaires, you look at Steve Jobs at Apple or Bill Gates at Microsoft, most of them said, hey, we've got this idea. Maybe we can make some money. Maybe we'll change the world a little bit, but we'll pay our bills, we'll make some money, and life will be good. We'll have some freedom. So when you founded Paychex, you initially were just looking at a relatively small universe of Rochester.
You're exactly right, Dave. My goal was to get 300 clients in Rochester, New York, and live happily ever after. It took me about 4 years to accomplish that. But one day, a friend of mine walked into the office, and we had worked together at Burroughs, and he said to me, Tom, it looks like you're making it with this thing. He says, how could I get involved? I said, Phil, well, we could open an office in Buffalo or Syracuse or Albany or all three, and you and I could go partners. And Phil said, sounds like a good idea, and we did that. About a few months after we got him started, a client, an employee of a client came into the office to pick up his payroll, saw me, and he says, Tom, this is really a great service. He says, you know, I would like to move to some other part of the country and start a similar business. And I said to him, Chuck, I said, well, where are you interested in going? He says, well, Miami, Florida. I said, Chuck, I don't know. You want to be my partner? And he said, no, I don't want to be your partner, but I'll be your franchisee. So I said, you mean you'll pay me an upfront fee and maybe some recurring revenue percentage and that type of thing? And he said, sure. So we got together. We came up with a franchise agreement between the two of us, and off Chuck went to Miami, Florida. We got the lawyers involved in that franchise agreement. after 2 or 3 hours of trying to settle what I call inconsequential issues, but they're trying to make a big deal out of them. Chuck and I said to the lawyers, we're going to leave the room. We'll come back with the deal. We came back with the deal and said, don't screw it up, guys. Just do the paperwork right. So it's a little story about paying people by the hour. But anyway, I got these people, these two guys going, and they did good jobs. So then I decided, is this a way to build a national organization by offering partnerships and franchises? I decided, yes. So the next 4 years, I spent recruiting people. As I said, most of them were all from Rochester. And getting them started as a franchisee or as a partner in Paychex in another part of the country. Ended up with 17 of them, including my wife, my first wife. We decided to go our separate ways.
And that's an interesting story. That's a fascinating story.
And at the time, I didn't have very much liquidity. And when I asked her what she might like in the form of a settlement, she says, well, you haven't sold the New York City franchise. Why don't you give me that? Fund me till I get to break even, help me buy a house, and we'll call it square if you do that. And I waited a week. I wanted to talk to her again to make sure she really wanted to do it. She obviously wanted to do it. So I said, okay, and we did it. And she went down to New Jersey, had the New York City market, did a terrific job, was a great salesperson, a little scared of the computer room, but a great salesperson. And consequently, when we consolidated into one company, she ended up being one of the larger shareholders of the company.
And that's interesting because you jumped ahead, but that's great. Again, talking about how candid you were in this book really was fascinating. You have a section called Divorce, the Ultimate Negotiation. And many people would shy away from saying how many times they were divorced, what their deals were. You were very honest, Tom. You said you've been divorced 3 times, and your good deal for everyone philosophy extends to your personal life. And you said that on both of your divorces, or two of the three, you paid both sides of the legal fees. For the third, you paid your side. But what was fascinating is the total amount that you paid for all three divorces, which is unheard of, which lawyers listening today are going to be not very thrilled with, a total of $6,000. And you say, why? Because you sat down with everyone and said, I'm going to work out a reasonable settlement. We're not going to let the lawyers chew this up. If more people would follow your advice, we could put more lawyers out of business.
Well, I believe you're right. You know, we settled it at the kitchen table between the two of us. And because we came to an agreement without outside, let me call it meddling, you know, too often the partners, they talk to their family members, their friends, and they give them all kinds of what I consider to be bad ideas about negotiating. So the fact that we did it ourselves, we did it right at the kitchen table. We told the the lawyers not to mess up the paperwork. And we saved a tremendous amount of money. But the most important thing is we saved a tremendous amount of grief.
You know, it's
not
amazing.
Setting up, you know, a hostile environment.
Yeah, you see so many people today where if they would just sit down with any business, whether it's a partnership, a company, people, partners leaving, or a marriage, you would. If you could just sit down and say, listen, rather than paying all the lawyers, let's divvy something fair. We're both not happy. We're going to have to give something up. But if they would do that, that certainly would be more efficient, practical for everyone involved. Tom Golisano, the founder of Paychex, former owner of the Buffalo Sabres, Built Not Born, new book, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. So, Tom, tell us how the franchise deal worked, because I at one time was a client of Paychex when I owned some radio stations here in the Tampa Bay area, and I never realized that the St. Petersburg office that we dealt with probably was a franchise.
Initially it was. Yes, it was. It was part of the Miami situation, the Miami franchise. It's been very successful down in northern Florida as well as Miami. What else would I say about it? They provide a great service there.
They really did, and it's incredible today when you think about it. I would say back then you had to have a computer. There was no such thing as cloud computing, so you had to have computer rooms, computer systems in every office, correct?
Yes, we did. Today that's not necessarily true because of the cloud and the Internet, we're able to process remotely. It makes us much more efficient, much more accurate in what we do. But you're right. Each individual office had its own computer and delivered its service on a very personal level to the clients in the area that you serviced.
Are you still involved with Paychex? Obviously, you're still a shareholder. Are you still involved on the day-to-day or the long-term focus of Paychex?
Paychex is a public corporation. I stepped down as CEO in 2004, but I've remained as chairman of the board ever since. Am I involved on a day-to-day basis? No, but I'll probably have a conversation with the current CEO or other officers probably once every other week. We have a good working relationship. Company's got a strong board of directors, and I'm proud to be associated with it.
Do you miss the day-to-day involvement at any time?
No. I certainly enjoyed it while I was involved.
Right.
But what's happened to me is I've just gotten involved in a lot of other activities. I've become a serial entrepreneur myself, investing in other ventures. And as you know, I was involved in a while in politics, and philanthropy keeps me busy as well.
Well, we're going to get to all that, but I found it interesting. I just looked up the revenues for Paychex. The company you founded, it was 1971, I believe?
Correct.
1971, where you thought, maybe if I could get 300 accounts in Rochester, man, this would be great. Life would be good. Well, you started that 49 years ago. Today, the revenue is over $3.4 billion, which is absolutely incredible.
And the interesting thing, Dave, you know that 300 clients that I want took me 4 years. Paychex today, with its sales organization, sells almost 2,000 clients a week.
That's amazing. That is absolutely incredible. And let's face it, it's a great service because filling out the manually doing paychecks, and even if you have a computer program at your office and filling the tax returns, it is a royal pain. So you basically have created a service. I remember at the time it was very reasonably priced. I'm sure it still is, where you basically took a headache off an entrepreneur or a business owner's or a company's to-do list. You made it much easier. And that, to me, is, I think, ultimately what every entrepreneur wants to do is find a niche, find some sort of business where people say, yeah, this is great. I have to have this. And that's exactly what Paychex did. Now, one of the things you mentioned, that you are involved in some other businesses and you're a serial entrepreneur, I thought was very interesting. You talk about viability on one page. The number of times where I will look at proposals or people that will say, hey, I've got this idea, and you look at this thing, and it's a 140-page PowerPoint presentation, and ultimately I learned pretty much, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Tom, or if I'm right, but first and foremost, the thing you're investing in is the person, the entrepreneur. That's the number one. If they don't have it, if they don't have the desire, doesn't matter how great the business plan or how great their PowerPoint presentation is, it's not going to work.
That's exactly right. When you look at a potential investment, there are two major factors. I think the secondary one is, does the concept make sense? Can you build a product around it? Can you make enough profit margin on it to sustain yourself? Those types of questions. But the other question is, do you have the right person in charge that's going to run the organization? I call him the jockey or her. And there are concerns about their qualifications or their ability to get the job done, that's a really red flag, as good as the concept might be. So two very important parts. Definitely the jockey is the most important part of this thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I never forget when I was a student at Syracuse University, I took a course with the dean of the School of Business, School of Management, Richard Oliker. He was fantastic. Course met twice per week, 7:30 was the earliest, or 7:15 a.m., earliest class on campus. And his attitude was, in the real world of business, everything doesn't start at 8:30. You got to be prepared for the real world when sometimes you're going to get in nice and early. So it was from 7:15, and loved the class, but I'll never forget, he had two exams, a midterm and a final. And I don't know if you remember back when you were in college, they had those little books that if you had to do an essay, it was like a blue cover and a blue back cover, and there was maybe about 12 white line pages or 14 line pages in this little book. And he asked two questions on his midterm and his final, and his one stipulation was you cannot use more than one of those little books. So he said, I don't care if you're writing in the margins. I don't care if you're writing on the cover, but you're not getting more than one. And what was amazing is the first time I took the exam, the midterm, he asked two questions. And the answers were relatively simple. So my first answer, I think, was maybe 12 sentences. And the second one was maybe six. And I thought, man, this can't be right. I'm looking at all these people writing in the margins. I handed it in. And afterwards, when he handed it back, he said, all right, for all of you that decided that, you know, more is better, let me make it simple. I asked you two simple questions, and you all came back with convoluted answers, with the exception of three students. And he, you know, basically had us all stand up, called us out. And I remember I became friendly with him after I graduated, and he said, the problem, everybody, it's sometimes things are so simple they have to make it complicated. And you probably see that all the time, Tom, in deals that you look at. And even businesses, when you were at Paychex, people that would come to you with something that should be simple, they turned it into a convoluted mess.
Well, we probably get 2 to 3 business plans a week, and almost every one of them has a little bit of this problem with them. People will put in volumes of information where I believe the most important page is, what's the revenue going to be? What are your expenses? What's going to be the profit? And how long will it take you to get there based on sales activity? To me, that's the most important thing. In the case of Paychex, it was easy for me. I knew each client, let's say I brought in $20 a pay period in revenue, and our overhead was $1,000. Well, you need 50 clients to break even. And if you sell one a week, you can say, well, it takes me 50 weeks to get those 50 clients. I can figure out how much money I'm going to lose each week, add it up, and that's my capital expense. It's a pretty easy formula. But so many times you don't see that in these business plans. And the other thing that is sort of irritating to me, but I see it so often, is people come in with these ideas that they say a market is some large number, and they're going to get 10% of that market in a very short period of time. Well, Paychex, who I consider to be a fairly successful company, has been in the payroll processing business going on 48 years now, and we only have 7% of the market. I mean, it's a huge market, and when people come in and say they're going to get 5 or 10% of the market in a year or two, it just doesn't happen. And, of course, you all probably realize, too, the biggest mistake I think entrepreneurs make is they always overestimate their ability to sell their product or service. They think just because they put up their shingle or put up their sign that the world is going to come to them, it just doesn't happen that way. You've got to go out. You've got to create that market. You've got to sell. You've got to create an environment of growth and adding customers.
But as an entrepreneur, Tom, I've got to believe that you probably say to yourself, boy, we've got 7. Okay, let's see if we can get to 10. Then you know what? Let's see if we can get to 15. Come on, every entrepreneur wants to get ultimately to 100.
Well, you just answered one of your questions from earlier. What happened to Paychex, and I think happens to a lot of companies that are successful, it comes in plateaus. When I consolidated the group of franchisees and partners and myself, we had about 20,000 clients. Well, our next site is, what are we going to do? How long is it going to take us to get to 50,000 clients? And then 100,000, and then 200,000. And that's how. And now today we have 670,000 clients that we do payroll and HR services. And then came along the concepts for the additional human resource services that we offer, like 401k processing and workers' compensation insurance and so forth. With those additional products, we have such a benefit, such a advantage, because we do the payroll, and it's all electronic, and we can provide services that are highly accurate and highly cost-efficient to our clients in the HR area. So we started building on that, and that's how an organization grows. I think anybody starts a business and say, I'm going to be a $1 billion company, never going to happen. It's seldom going to happen.
No, and as I said,
grow into it.
Yeah, and I think when you look at Steve Jobs working out of his garage with Steve Wozniak, those guys were just saying, hey, if we could sell maybe like 10 of these computers, we'll make a little money, and, we can move out of the garage. Nobody realized that two guys working in a garage would create a worldwide company that is just synonymous with technology, and the number of people that either use one of their products is in the billions across the globe. But nobody starts that way. It happens, and you can't necessarily plan it. That's something you can never put in a business plan. It's just going to happen, and if it does, great. But with paychecks, like you said, you were just looking for 300, and it just kept growing and growing. Tom, you're at heart, I can tell, you're a salesman really ultimately at heart. Do you think there are too many businesses today that are run by financial people that either don't have passion for the business or don't see the importance of sales? If you don't have revenue coming in, that's the lifeblood. You're dead no matter how great of a finance person you are.
I agree completely. You've heard the expression, I'm sure, nothing happens till a salesperson takes an order.
That's right.
That's very, very important. One of the biggest failures I see with entrepreneurs is they always overestimate their ability to sell their product or service. And when that happens, it means their revenue isn't what it needs to be, and that creates what they call a cash flow problem. Well, they'll go to a bank or they'll go to an investor and say, we're doing okay, but we have a cash flow problem. No, they have a sales problem. And the sales, lack of sales is what's caused the cash flow issue. So sales and sales management is such an important part of any organization, even a retail organization. And it's the foundation. So do I have a tendency to like salespeople and sales managers? Yeah. And I look for successful ones all the time.
You've always got to sell. Nothing happens, as you said, without selling it and taking the order and bringing in that revenue. We will continue our fascinating conversation with Tom Golisano, author of the book Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. He founded Paychecks, owned the Buffalo Sabres of the National Hockey League, and noted philanthropist as well, and just a regular guy from Rochester, New York, and didn't start with a billion. And really, when I think about Tom Golisano, or you think about Steve Jobs, or you think about some of the other entrepreneurs, Bill Gates, they basically start. Nobody sits there and says, I'm going to become a billionaire, like Bernard Sanders says. I'm going to become a billionaire. I'm going to sit down in my garage. I'm going to write some software. I'm going to make a little computer, and I'm going to become a billionaire. Nobody knows that. You just figure, hey, maybe I can make a product and make some money on it. You just don't know. You can't predict that. You can't put that in a business plan. So when I hear Bernard Sanders, he no longer goes after millionaires, because he is a billionaire now. He's got three houses, including a summer camp in Vermont. Who's got a summer camp? He got a summer house. He's got a summer camp. What is it, cap socialist? But he doesn't go after millionaires, just billionaires. But it's ridiculous, because people do not start a business thinking, man, I've got my business plan, by year 10, I'm going to be a billionaire. Doesn't happen that way. And obviously they had a service or have a product that people want. Nobody forces anybody to buy an iPhone. Nobody forces anybody to use paychecks. They're providing a product or service that people want. So when Bernard Sanders goes after them, forget about it.
Never miss a minute of the show when you download the Cigar Dave mobile app for Apple, Android, and Kindle devices. You can listen to our 24/7 continuous stream of the latest show, or download the recent podcasts to listen to anytime on your mobile device. Get the Cigar Dave mobile app in the App Store. Search Cigar Dave.
In 1964, Jose O. Padron began rolling cigars bearing his name in modest surroundings with one guiding principle: always focus on quality, never on quantity. Nearly 40 years later, Padron cigars are recognized for their superior taste and majestic construction. The result of Padron controlling all aspects of the cigar-making process, including planting their own seeds, growing and curing their own tobacco, and constantly supervising the rolling room. To Wall Street, it is called vertical integration. To the Padron family, it's called making great cigars. The Padron lines include the Padron 1964 Anniversary Series and the Padron Traditional traditional line. All Padron cigars are wrapped in Nicaraguan sun-grown Habano tobacco, available in natural or maduro. Experience Padron. For your Padron retailer, call 1-800-453-5635. When Padron is on the band, quality is a matter of family honor.
Surgeon General warning. Tobacco use increases the risk of infertility, stillbirth, and low birth weight.
The General returns in 3 minutes. Cigar Dave is back in just 2 minutes. Cigar Dave will return to the mic. The Cigar Dave Show resumes in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Got a few more minutes left with Tom Golisano, founder of Paychex, former owner of the Buffalo Sabres, philanthropist, author of the new book, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. And, Tom, we've got our listeners, our alphas, they're entrepreneurs, they're professionals, they love cigars, they love enjoying the good life, but they also believe in working hard, and they also believe in philanthropy. And I will say this, that you go to any event where there are cigar connoisseurs involved, whether it's a golf tournament or a charity auction, they are the first to dig into their pockets and say, you know what, happy to write the check. And you have been the perfect example of that, not only in your native Rochester, but also in Naples, where you now reside, between the Golisano Children's Museum, that is named after you, and you've been very active on the philanthropy front with numerous hospitals. I'd like you to go through that, because when you make it, you, in the book, talk about the importance of giving back to the community, the people that helped make you successful.
Yeah, philanthropy is a very important part of our life right now. And as you've mentioned, we've been involved in a lot of several hospitals and college institutions, the Special Olympics. I have a son who's developmentally disabled, and because of that, it was one of the driving forces of me trying to be successful as an entrepreneur, because I never wanted him to become a ward of the state in any way. So we've made sort of a specialty out of the organizations that serve people with developmental disabilities. But I can tell you one thing about philanthropy. It's not as easy as it looks. You would think giving away money is, you know, yeah, that's easy. It's not so easy if you want to do a good job. You almost have to do a lot of due diligence. An organization comes to you asking for a significant amount of lump money, like $5 or $10 million. You've got to go through a process of determining whether that's a good investment. The quality of the management, the quality of the project, their ability to get the project done, et cetera. So it's not as easy as it looks, but I'll tell you, it's very gratifying. You know, I do have involvement with three children's hospitals, and every week that goes by, I get a parent or a grandparent, a sister or a brother come to me and say, oh, our child was taken such good care of at the hospital. He's pulled through. He's doing well, or she's doing well. I can't thank you enough. Well, that's very gratifying to hear. I'm a little guilty of enjoying it a little too much, because I know the people that really do the job are the doctors and the nurses. I just help build the building. They're the ones that actually make it happen. But it is very gratifying, and I'm glad I'm in position to do it.
Yeah, as my grandmother always say, health is wealth, and I'm sure when you hear those stories that you're able to help other people that are in need, that's got to be incredibly gratifying, and clearly with the philanthropic endeavors you've been involved with. I know I've been to the Golisano Children's Museum, and I've seen it, so that's really an amazing an amazing place as well. And it's interesting, because in your two really adopted – well, Rochester, your native hometown, but Naples, your adopted hometown. You've also given back, even though you haven't been there as long as being in your native Rochester.
Yeah. Naples, Florida, is a great place to live. It's very culturally oriented. The people are very, very generous. It's just a good quality of living. So I'm very happy to be able to be a contributor to it.
All right, two other things I want to get to real quickly. One, politics. You ran for governor three times in New York State. And if anybody needs a business person, any state needs a business person in the worst way, it is New York State. I reside in Florida as well, up in the Cigar City of Tampa. Florida's population, just about, I think, a little bit bigger now than New York State's, but our state budget is half the size of New York State. What is wrong with New York State?
Gee, I'm glad there's somebody else besides me that recognizes that. Florida has 2.5 million more people. Its budget is about $88 billion this year, and New York State's budget's about $180. You're absolutely right. It's double in New York State. And there's less people in New York State. Isn't that sort of outrageous?
Yeah, and what's amazing is in New York State, there's all these there's a thruway commission, there's a bridge commission, there's a power commission. There's all these authorities and commissions. We don't have that in Florida, and yet everything seems to work rather well here in Florida. It really is incredible.
And it's a very interesting correlation between the two states. And obviously, I was reading an article in this morning's Buffalo News about the census is going to show people leaving New York State and going to places like Florida and Tennessee and Texas and so forth. It's a problem that I think has been brewing for a long time in New York State, and it's starting to catch up with us.
Yeah, and do you regret spending your money to run three times? Is it something that you look back on and say, yeah, maybe it was I wanted to do it at the time, but glad it didn't happen? Or I believe you would have made a dramatic impact, certainly having a business person that believes in watching taxpayers' dollars.
Well, the first two times I ran, it was more or less to establish the Independence Party. You had to get a certain number of votes to keep ballot access available to our group. And I was glad to do that. The third time I ran, I was really wanted to win. And I put a lot of effort into it and a lot of money and time. I've never regretted it. The process is very interesting. It's in some cases enjoyable, sometimes very frustrating. Dealing with the media sometimes can be a real issue, especially when you got people that are trying to undermine you right. all the time. But I made one conclusion. There's a real difference between politics and being in business, and let me tell you what I mean. In politics, you only have one winner in a race. In business, you can be in an industry where there are a lot of people that are active in it, and you all can be successful. Because of this one winner only mentality, I think politicians will go to absurd methods to get elected. I mean, I don't know if you watched the debate last night, but I mean, there's people screaming at each other and yelling.
What a disaster.
At each other.
What a disaster.
it's just because there's only one winner. I like business because you can have multiple winners and you can have a nice competitive atmosphere between the parties. Whereas in politics, it's just so negative.
Entrepreneur, sports team owner, philanthropist. That is Tom Golisano, and now noted book author. A best-selling book just released, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. We will continue our fascinating conversation with Tom around the corner.
Never miss a minute of the show when you download the Cigar Dave mobile app for Apple, Android, and Kindle devices. You can listen to our 24/7 continuous stream of the latest show or download the recent podcasts to listen to anytime on your mobile device. Get the Cigar Dave mobile app in the App Store. Search Cigar Dave.
Hi, this is Rocky Patel. I'm here with my brother Nish and my cousin Nimish, and we're talking cigars. Guess what? They want me to vote on what my favorite cigar is. It's tough, but I'm going to go with the Decade. I love it. It's rich, decadent, and smooth.
Rocky, you know what? The Decade's a great cigar, but the 15th anniversary, that's the cigar. That celebrated your 15 years in business, and I got to tell you, it's my favorite.
You know what, Nish and Rocky, you both are wrong. The best cigar is Freedom by Rocky Patel. This cigar delivers a lot of spice, a lot of flavor, and in my opinion, it's the best cigar we make.
As usual, we can't agree. But guess what? There's a great cigar for everyone. I promise you, nobody works harder than we do to make you a great quality cigar. Come visit us at RockyPatel.com.
Surgeon General warning, cigars are not a safe alternative to cigarettes.
The Cigar Dave Officers Club has been en fuego, on fire with marvelous selections. And we continue that trend for February. We feature a full-flavored selection of Crown Head's unique artisanal quality cigars. First up, the Jericho Hill, dedicated to the man in black. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. Jericho Hill, the first Nicaraguan cigar from Crown Heads. It's wrapped in a Mexican San Andrean Maduro wrapper. Rich, dark, delivers medium to full-flavored attitude. Then we feature the La Imperiosa. Buckle up. It's a seriously full-flavored beauty. Ecuadorian Habano Oscuro wrapper ignites massive notes of pepper. And then we wrap it up with Juarez, inspired by Jericho Hill. But Juarez amps up the strength, delivering notes of spice and sweetness. $22.95 per month. You get three great cigars like the Crown Heads full-flavored sampler. Go to CigarDave.com, click on Officers Club, and join the Officers Club today.
Don't go anywhere. Cigar Dave is back in 2 minutes.
just one more minute until Cigar Dave returns. Your five-star general is back in 5, 4, 3, 2. Patriotically made in the USA. America's alpha male in chief, Cigar Dave.
We'll rejoin our interview with Tom Golisano, founder of Paychex, owner of the Buffalo Sabres, former owner of the Buffalo Sabres, philanthropist, author of the new book, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaires. Let me do it in Bernie Sanders style. Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaires, No Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. I'm a billionaire myself. When I wrote a book, I don't know what the book was about, but my wife Jade said it was a good book, made me a billionaire, so I don't go after billionaires anymore. I just go after billionaires, trillionaires, and gazillionaires. And I do so from my summer camp in Vermont. Bernie Sanders. Talking about Made in America, we have the rejoin liner, proudly made in America. We need to start proudly making our pharmaceuticals and other health-related important items here in the United States. National security issue. Talked about it in the opening monologue. It is beyond repulsive, beyond shameful that we don't manufacture drugs here in the United States. We do some, but 80% of the raw materials come from China. Let me ask you this question. You hear about that market that sells rats and bats and pigs and cats and dogs. And by the way, in many Chinese restaurants, they do slaughter cats and dogs because there was a note that came out from the Chinese government telling restaurants to avoid slaughtering and cooking and eating cats and dogs. They're dirty people. If you look at many of China, I'm not everybody, but much of China is still rural and backwards. Look at the nonsense they're eating. That open market is busy every day eating all sorts of wild vermin and animals. So many of the Chinese people, even though many have come out of poverty, many are still eating items that are just should not be on a menu, period. But we need to start making things back here in the United States. I'm just fed up, absolutely fed up, that we have abdicated our pharmaceutical manufacturing and other key manufacturing to China. The Chinese commie bastards are not our friends. They are our enemies. Proof? They suppressed what happened with coronavirus. If they were the world's friend, they would have been honest about it and said, we're going to contain it. We want the world to know. We don't want this to spread. Did they do that? The answer is a resounding, absolute, loud no. Yet. Tom Golisano, the author of the brand new book, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs, founded Paychex, philanthropist, ran for governor of New York State 3 times, founded the Independence Party there. And lastly, Tom, I cannot finish this interview without talking about the Buffalo Sabres. Growing up in Buffalo, huge Sabres fan, still am. And the Buffalo Sabres for many, many years, I mean, they were really just a great team, the French connection, a lot of history, always well supported by the fans in Western New York. And you're a sports fan, but not necessarily a hockey fan. And I know that
got involved with the Buffalo Sabres, I had seen 3 NHL games in my life. I wasn't what you'd call a fan. And But understanding the problem with the Buffalo Sabres having gone through bankruptcy in Buffalo and the danger of them potentially leaving the area, I got involved.
Our mutual friend Larry Quinn must have done a great sales job on you because, again, only seeing three hockey games. But tell us the process, because it didn't happen when he said, Tom, you should buy this team. It really was – went. There's some time that went by before you finally said, maybe I'll do this.
Yeah. Well, I got together with Larry Quinn and Dan DePofi. They were introduced to me, and having much experience in the field, it was a good match. But when they showed me the cash flow and the profit projections, I said, who wants to own this thing? And I could see why it went bankrupt. We only had about 5,000 season ticket holders at the time. But I sat on the idea. I began to realize how important it was to the city of Buffalo, the metropolitan area, not to lose this team. And I said, what the heck, let's give it a try. And Larry and Dan, through their leadership and my help, and we turned the whole thing around. We went in 1 year and a half, we went from 5,000 season ticket holders to 15,000 season ticket holders in a year and a half, and a waiting list. Now, winning games was the key thing, but we also did some things for the fans. We, you know, new scoreboard, new ribbon boards. We put into a program of pricing where it depended on the importance of the game. In other words, when we played Montreal and Toronto, I guess our prices were higher. And when we play a team like Atlanta or Tampa, they would be lower, so families could enjoy the game as well as the other fans. So we did a lot of great things, and we turned the thing completely around. Where it became a profitable organization. Then Larry developed some heart issues, and his health was a question. And I know because of self-inflicted pressure, you know, he still wanted to work hard and so forth. I became a little concerned for him. Terry Pegula came along and said he'd be interested in buying the team. And we gave him a price, and Terry said, okay, and we sold the team. Now, I'm happy as heck because Terry Pegula is going to guarantee that team is going to be there forever, at least forever for the time he's around. So we accomplished something very, very important, and we transferred over something to him that was in much better shape than when we got it.
Well, I know that the National Hockey League did not want the Sabres to leave because of the great fan support over many years, but there was a possibility that it could have. So by Larry convincing you and you coming in, not being a big hockey fan, but my understanding was from what Larry told me, after 8 years of owning the team, you kind of became a pretty diehard hockey fan.
I do watch all the Sabre games on TV when I can, for sure. And I know a lot more about the game now than I did then.
Right, absolutely. One last thing. You talk about...
Like what icing is.
Right, exactly. Well, I remember when the Tampa Bay Lightning first started here in Tampa, I was at the very first game, knew Phil Esposito, and at the time I had some radio stations, and we had carried an exhibition game, and we had signed up to carry the Lightning game. So obviously I was in attendance at many of the games, and the first game, I'll never forget, the fans in Tampa were new to hockey. Whenever there was an offsides or an icing, people started applauding. They thought it was a good thing. They had no clue. But now Tampa's become a really tremendous hockey town. And it's great to see because it really is a great sport. And when you see it in person, there's really nothing like it. But lastly, I want to bring up something that you bring up, a negotiating tactic or something that can be used whenever you're questioning people, the pregnant pause. And actually, you use that with Larry Quinn and the other members of the Buffalo Sabres during a little retreat down to your home in Naples. So let's talk about the pregnant pause and then kind of that little quick story about how you used it with the management of the Buffalo Sabres.
Sure, the pregnant pause, and I don't know where the name came from. I don't know if I coined it or somebody used it with me in the room. But anyway, it's called the pregnant pause. And basically what it is, when you're interviewing somebody or negotiating with somebody or making a sales presentation, you get to a point where it's time for you, the presenter, to shut up and give the person on the other end of the table a chance to speak. And the main reason is so you can find out what they're thinking. Well, we had a problem with one of our contracts of a player we traded for. In the contract, it called for a $250,000 bonus for a player, if he got traded to the Sabres and played so many games, he would get that bonus, and we would be responsible for it. Well, the people that negotiated the contract for us didn't realize that clause was in the contract. We ended up playing the young man enough so that he earned the bonus. Well, we didn't intend to keep the player very long, so we felt it was really a mistake we made that cost the company, the organization, a lot of money. And the general manager of hockey, his name was Darcy Beshear, had the overall responsibility for managing these contracts. So I brought Larry and Dan and Darcy down to my house in Florida, and we sat in a little room, and I brought up this problem. And I just sat there. And the four of us were at a little card table, a room about 10 by 10, for 45 minutes, and nobody said a word. Now, if you could imagine the tension building up in that room, but nobody willing to say anything. Finally, Darcy Beshear, who was mainly responsible for the error, says to me, "Tom, if you want me to pay for it, I'll pay for it." And I said, "Darcy, forget about it. It's water over the dam. Let's move on." I just wanted, selfishly, him to admit that it was a mistake and that he was willing to stand by it. And it showed me the true character of the person, which was very positive.
Yeah, I mean, for him, that's incredible for him to volunteer and say, because you could have said, "Yeah, Darcy, you know what, I'm gonna dock your pay out of that." Not that you would, but for somebody to do that, I think does reveal character. By the way, Darcy's a fellow cigar connoisseur as well. Big cigar fan also.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
Yep, absolutely. Big listener of my show up in Buffalo on WBEN when he resided in Buffalo, and absolutely loves cigars as well. And, Tom, lastly in the book, the final sentence that you have in here, which I think is very important, because no matter all the hard work, everything that you do, the toil, the sweat, the last sentence in your book, if I can pass on one more piece of sage wisdom, and I quote, "Don't forget to have fun!" !
I agree 100%. I don't know who wrote that, but I agree with it.
You wrote it. It's in your book. You said, "Don't forget to have fun." But you're absolutely. And Tom, I'll tell you what. I would love if you, when I get down to Naples, because I visit Rocky Patel often. We definitely have to have a cigar together. And if you would like, the Padrones are very good friends of mine. If you would like to meet them down in Miami, have some special cigars that aren't available to anybody. I will arrange that and meet you down there, and we'll have some cigars, and we can talk more about the book and some other great experiences. Because really, when you're having a cigar with someone and you can interact and have a conversation, that's all about having fun.
Yeah, I agree 100%. When you get down here, give me a call. We'll get together.
We'll do it. Tom Golisano, founder of Paychex, philanthropist, owned the Buffalo Sabres, turned them around, and author of a great book, Alphas. I'm telling you, you've got to buy this book. I read it in two nights. It was just a conversational read. Built, Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. Trust me, you'll love it, and you will enjoy it. I certainly enjoyed my conversation with Tom Golisano, the founder of Paychex, former owner of the Buffalo Sabres, philanthropist, author of the new book, Built Not Born, A Self-Made Billionaire's No-Nonsense Guide for Entrepreneurs. I enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Many of you are entrepreneurs, business owners, professionals, investors, potential entrepreneurs, business owners. So I hope you found that fascinating. And I certainly hope that you found what I had to say about China being our enemy to be candid, truthful, and the right way to deal with our enemy, China. Cigar Dave, the General, saying, "Mayor Humidor, always be full. Mayor Cutter, always be sharp. Mayor Ashby, extra, extra long. Semper Delectatio, always pleasure. Long live the Alpha. Make America great again. Masculinity great again. Screw the enemies of pleasure, and screw the Chinese commie bastards."
That concludes today's live Cigar Dave show. Stay tuned as the replay will begin momentarily. Sit back, relax, and light up a cigar.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRostrup. Joe Biden scored a resounding victory in South Carolina's Democratic primary Saturday night.
For the former vice president, the victory comes at a crucial moment in the Democratic presidential nominating process. And for his part, he laid claim to the heart of the Democratic Party.
A proud Democrat! An Obama-Biden Democrat!
Looking ahead to Super Tuesday, there are more than 1,350 pledged delegates at stake in 14 states, including the big prizes of Texas and California. The latter had moved itself up in the calendar in order to have more of an influence on the Democratic race for president. George Manzani reporting.
In other primary night news, Tom Steyer said $24 million, that is, enough to see the handwriting on the wall. He suspended his campaign Saturday night after getting only 11% of the vote, less than the 15% threshold needed to share in the delegates. Once again, CPAC had the President of the United States as its speaker.
I'm thrilled to be back at CPAC with the thousands of proud American patriots who love our country, respect our flag, honor our history, uphold our laws, protect our Constitution, and always put America first.
The president gave his usual campaign effort at times, having the audience laughing as he picked apart his potential challengers while highlighting successes of the last 3.5 years. Earlier at the White House, he praised all parties in the historic signing of a peace agreement between the U.S. and Taliban.
I really believe the Taliban wants to do something to show that we're not all wasting time. If bad things happen, we'll go back. I let the people know we'll go back, and we'll go back so fast that we'll go back with a force like nobody's ever seen.
President, news and analysis at townhall.com.
Bastian Gorka here for Relief Factor, the 100% drug-free supplement that was formulated by doctors to help your body deal with inflammation and pain. The reason I've told so many of my friends about the 3-week quick start is because as we get older, occasional aches and pains can be a real problem, keeping you from sleeping through the night or doing the things you love and need to do, like taking walks or playing golf, going up or downstairs, or simply playing with your kids or grandkids. Tens of thousands are now like me, glad they ordered the 3-week quick start for just $19.95. After years of back pain, I found relief, and I believe you could too. Folks, this is why the father and son owners of Relief Factor, Pete and Seth Talbot, created the 3-week quick start, and they discounted it to only $19.95. Approximately 70% of those who order it go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain, too. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384.
Socialist headliners in Venezuela opened fire during a march headed by Juan Guaido, injuring a 16-year-old demonstrator and adding to tensions in the country as the opposition leader seeks to revive his campaign to oust Nicolas Maduro. Meanwhile, the Federal Communications Commission has proposed roughly $200 million in fines combined to four major U.S. phone companies for improperly disclosing customers' real-time locations.
The FCC said during a news conference Friday that the fines amounted to $91 million for T-Mobile, $57 million for AT&T, $48 million for Verizon, and $12 million for Sprint. The carriers could object to the proposed fines, which could change. Location data makes it possible to identify the whereabouts of nearly any phone in the U.S. The carriers had apparently allowed outside companies to pinpoint the location of wireless devices without their owner's knowledge or consent, according to published reports. Patrick Foss reporting.
Parts of Virginia's governor... Winner-take-all system in Texas uses to assign Electoral College presidential votes is constitutional.
That ruling by the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans is the latest defeat for organizations that say each state's electors should be chosen proportionately based on the percentage of the statewide vote. The 5th Circuit says 48 states use a winner-take-all system, and that system was upheld by the Supreme Court in 1969. The ruling upholds an earlier dismissal of a challenge to the Texas system. Similar lawsuits are being pursued in 3 other states. John Scott reporting.
Concord Coach Lines, the latest company to announce it will no longer allow immigration officers onto buses unless they have a warrant. It follows Greyhound's move this past week that it'll no longer allow warrantless immigration checks on buses. The American Civil Liberties Union has been pushing for the moves. because they fear people of color or with foreign accents would be singled out. More news at townhall.com.
We'll begin in 1 minute. The Brian Kilmeade Show will begin in 30 seconds. Enjoy. News Radio Studios in New York City. Fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, appreciate you listening. Thanks so much for being there. Hal Ford Jr. in studio. If you're watching Fox Nation, you see Harold here. We're coming to you from the world headquarters in New York, where you call home. He used to call Tennessee home, but now we've adopted him. He's officially in. He actually knows how to work the subways. Harry Katsianos will be with us, too, at the bottom of the hour, senior director for the Center for National Interest. We got to talk about what's happening in China, North Korea, South Korea, China, obviously, and the coronavirus and how it all relates. He's got some insight on what we're looking at because, and North Korea, China especially, they're not exactly transparent about how bad this is, about anything, let alone how bad this is. And keep in mind, too, if you ever miss the show, you can get us on radio.com. And you can listen to us live if you have to travel off your local affiliate. You also can get us on a podcast, BrianKilmeadShow.com. Before we get to the congressman, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Misconception, and you're hearing it here tonight, is that the ideas I'm talking about are radical. They're not. In one form or another, they exist in countries all over the world.
In countries like Venezuela, Cuba, Moldova, Dr. Doom's Latveria, they all make it work.
Stephen Colbert mocking a Democrat? Kinda? Yes. They are fearful. Why don't the Democrats like Bernie, are they afraid he can't win or afraid he will win?
Number two.
It's not a stretch to think that this election could turn on the issue of competence. When people start worrying about competence in dealing with a health issue nationwide, this could turn something.
The coronavirus, game time for the Trump team as the numbers rise. Can this China-based virus do something Pelosi and Schiff couldn't, critically injure the president's reelection hopes?
Number one.
Tom, I think she was talking about my plan, not yours.
I think we were talking about math, and it doesn't take 2 hours to do the math. Because let's talk about what it adds up.
Let's talk about math.
Let's talk about math.
Let's talk about math.
Okay, so here's the math. No, here's the math.
Can I respond to the attack?
That was just a slice of the chaos we witnessed for 2 hours. Debate to the death on CBS. What a mess the Field of Seven gave us yesterday. We'll try to sift through the chaos, too, to give you the highs, lows, winners, and losers. And that's why we asked Harold Ford Jr. to come in, former congressman from Tennessee, current member, currently chairman of RX Saver. And we'll talk about that shortly. But, Congressman, when I'm watching this, I said to myself, someone stop them from yelling at each other or over each other. The candidates were dying to get their words in, but overall the viewers lost.
Yeah, it was an uneven order at the place last night. A lot more disorder and discord. Look, you walk away from it. Bernie Sanders is the front runner. He took a lot of the incoming. I thought Pete Buttigieg acquitted himself fairly well. It seems like it takes him too long, though, to make points. He almost wants us to know how smart he is as he's making a point. He could probably make three or four more points if he didn't do that. I thought Warren she went back after Bloomberg. I thought Bloomberg was much better. But Warren, was this uninspiring? I don't understand the constant monotonous attack. I mean, you have to be a happy warrior in politics, and you can't lose your sense of humor, and she seems to have lost hers. Sanders, he's not quite ready for prime time. I don't know how much he hurt himself last night, but what he demonstrated is that he will be taken apart if he's the nominee around how much all of these things that he wants to do, how much they cost, not to mention some of the optics. To have Stephen Colbert mock your performance, one of the signature pieces of your what you like to do as president, is very revealing if Democrats are watching this closely. I thought Buttigieg hit him very hard, saying, you know, how can anyone, I mean, running for president of the Democratic side, find the upside in Fidel Castro and make that a key part of what he's campaigning on?
It's incredible.
I thought Bloomberg hit him hard, and he deserved it. I mean, when you're the front runner, you have to take this. So Biden, I thought, overall came out of this looking pretty good. He remained standing, and I don't mean that in a flippant way. He stood strong. He probably was a little emotional and a little too loud and a little too eager in some of his expressions, but he made clear that he was here to fight, that he believes strongly that if we nominate – I'm a Democrat – if we nominate Sanders, we hurt ourselves or we disadvantage ourselves at a time in which Democrats may have an even shot at winning in 2020. In addition, if you're a member of Congress who won in one of these contested districts, the 40 members that gave Democrats a majority, Pete Buttigieg and Mike Bloomberg made clear last night that having Sanders at the top of the ticket may not be in your best interest, and not one of those 40 members of Congress who delivered the majority for Democrats have endorsed Bernie Sanders. In fact, I don't know of anybody who's endorsed Bernie Sanders who served with them. I served with them in Congress. There are members of Congress, including the congresswoman from Queens here, who was commonly known as AOC, and some of the other members of that squad, but they didn't serve with him in the House. I served with them, and I don't know of any member of Congress. I'd stand to be corrected and look forward to being corrected on this, but I don't know of any member who served with now Senator Sanders when he was a congressman who's endorsed him.
Why?
Well, I think a lot
is
of
it what he believes or who he is.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to.
But I mean, is he somebody? Is he abrasive? Is he hard to be around?
Look, I think the issues here, I think maybe what bothers him. Now, in fairness to him, the makeup of the Congress has changed. There may not be people there who are still there, but there are those of us who are not there who have not endorsed him either. So I think it's, for me, I can only speak for. It's his policies. It's how you pay for them. I was a blue dog when I was in Congress. We believe, which we'd like to succinctly say, we believed in arithmetic at the end of the day. And a lot of what Senator Sanders wants, I agree with his analysis of some of the challenges, if not huge parts of the challenges that everyday middle-class families are facing. I just don't believe his answers are sustainable or affordable.
I want you to hear what Michael Bloomberg said exactly, because he knew exactly what he was doing. He is going to tell people, not that I'm better than Bernie Sanders, that Bernie doesn't work. Cut 17.
Let me also say, because it just since I have the floor for a second, that I really am surprised that all of these my fellow contestants up here, I guess would be the right word for it, given nobody pays attention to the clock, I'm surprised they show up, because I would have thought after I did such a good job in beating them last week that they'd be a little bit afraid to do that.
Yeah, I let that play out. That was the wrong bite I called for, but that's another example of he's not a funny guy. He's got to stay away from the jokes. Don't you think?
His strength is leadership. I thought when...
So be a leader.
Right. So when I think when he talked about the coronavirus and other... Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I want to get it right now. Cut 10.
If you keep on going, we will elect Bernie. Bernie will lose to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump and the House and the Senate and some of the state houses will all go red. And then between gerrymandering and appointing judges for the next 20 or 30 years, we're going to live with this catastrophe. Thank you.
Is he wrong?
Look, the makeup of the court certainly hangs in the balance. The integrity of the Oval Office in the minds of a lot of Americans hangs in the balance. Access to affordable education, health care, housing, all of that hangs in the balance. So he's best when he's doing that. I thought when he talked about the coronavirus and talked about how we have dismissed people at the national level from key positions at protecting our public health infrastructure, those are the kinds of things that when Mike Bloomberg talks about, I think there's more of a willingness to listen. Joke telling is not a strength. I don't know many politicians who tell jokes very well, so I would encourage
President
them all
Obama
to
was pretty funny.
Yeah, but I said not many of them tell jokes very well. I mean, I thought W was funny, whether he intended to or not. He was often funny. But when your strength is a serious lane, is a leadership lane, you should stay there. And I thought last night Mayor Bloomberg did that certainly much better than he did the other night.
All right, so let me ask you. You've been in debates before, and I'm sure on some level you thought about getting back into the fray. When you are sitting there on the stage. You know so much is at stake, but you also know the moderators aren't taking control of this thing. Do you join in, or do you try to be the adult in the room? If you missed it last night because you were watching our channel, here we go.
Senator Sanders,
if you get nominated, we'll be relitigating this all year.
Do what
Senator,
I ask.
Look, first of all, let me go.
We'd ask respectfully if you would all please try to keep to the
good
time.
Idea.
So let's clear this up once and for all.
Now, this you've got people believing something that is false.
Billionaires, new topic, Senator Klobuchar.
I don't know where you got the impression.
If you could honor the rules of the debate.
I mean, it's unbelievable, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. So if it's you, Harold, and you know what's at stake, the presidency, the nomination, last shot at Bernie Sanders, Super Tuesdays, 5 days away, big primary on Saturday.
That's what they all were gunning for.
What do you do if you're? Do you think about stepping back? Do you wait for your moment just say I'm embarrassed by the way this is going? You got to start it. Well, leading to your time, we got to have some organization here.
Well, that was on the moderators in CBS, and no disrespect to Nora Donald or Gail King, who are both friends, but someone should have stood up and said we're going to take a break and tell them all anyone that goes over their time. Your mic will be cut off, and we will take time from you, dock time from you, and when your next answer comes up. But it just literally, I mean, I think CBS probably sat back and said, look, the stakes are high, you know, the emotions are running high, spirits are running high here, and they want to make sure they get their words in. But it didn't serve the nation, let alone Democrats in South Carolina, I don't think. But again, as you step back from it, how much of a glove did you lay on Bernie Sanders? I don't know. I think Joe Biden certainly demonstrated to voters in South Carolina that I am the Joe Biden you've known for the last four decades, and I can lead this country. I thought one of his more telling moments and one of the more compelling moments for him is when he talked about how he would approach the coronavirus and how he would demand that health officials, U.S. health officials, be on the ground in China assisting and learning along with the Chinese government and Chinese health officials. He made that point over and over again, and again, I think it resonated with voters.
Right.
But there's no doubt CBS did not handle this as well as they could have. And hopefully the next network who's going to have the debates learn from it as well.
60%, I believe, of South Carolina residents are African-American? Or
people who will vote in the primary. 60%,
okay.
I think, are.
So almost everybody went out of their way to talk about how minority rights have to be looked at. And Tom Steyer went the furthest, saying, I'm for reparations. And then other, you know, they talked about Mike Bloomberg came out and said, you know, if my success would have been much harder if I was black, and there are people who are black that are successful would have had a much easier time. How, from your perspective, as somebody from the South, but you're from Tennessee, how do you hear, when you hear these candidates, did anybody resonate when it comes to African Americans?
Oh, yeah. I thought that Biden resonated. I thought Steyer's. I mean, I don't think reparations is something that the country's going to pass. So I appreciate the fervor there. But I appreciated Mike Bloomberg as much as any of them, because I think he has had success in his life. He's had failures in his life, and he's learned from them all. And for him to honestly say, someone who's amongst the five richest people in the country, I could not have achieved the level of success commercially and financially had I been black, or would have been much, much harder. I think it's something that gives every American an opportunity to step back, whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, whether you're a parent, whether you run a school, whether you are a news host. You sit back, and I think you have to take into account. We respect wealth in this country for a variety of reasons, right and wrong. And to hear, I've never heard a person in the top 10 in this country of wealth, people who control wealth, make that kind of statement. So,
but did he hold it for the people? Because does he know the audience?
Well, that resonated with me. And I you know, the audience, he's not on the ballot there in South Carolina, so we won't be able to tell how that plays, particularly in South Carolina. But we'll learn very quickly on Tuesday night whether or not this strategy of his is working. And I got to think that last night, he took a big step forward in helping him to achieve that goal.
So the whole how do you feel about stop and frisk?
I lived here during a lot of it, and I was never stopped, thankfully. I understood what the mayor was trying to get done with it from the outset. It wasn't to protect us along 6th Avenue and 5th Avenue here. It was to protect neighborhoods where gun violence is at a high, and people and parents are concerned about their kids walking to school and walking home from school. He admitted that it went overboard, and there's ample evidence, anecdotal as well as legal. It was eventually overturned by the court. But if you look at the homicide rates, how they came down,
yeah.
If you look at recidivism rates, all of that came down. All the numbers that should have moved down, moved down. The numbers that should have moved up, moved up. I do fault him for his insensitivity to it while he was mayor. And perhaps he was just caught in a cocoon. But he has since apologized for that.
But that's just
I like the way he takes big risks to solve big challenges. And when you take big risks in commercial life, political life, there's going to be a little bit of a downside to it. Things may not work right. So I don't blame him like some people are blaming him and have blamed him.
You're the expert politician. So you watch the crime levels go down. That's the thing he was running on. I mean, that's when he was going to run. Originally, they were talked about.
He was trying to reduce gun violence.
Right.
He's really stopping people to see if they had guns or knives.
Absolutely, because he believes crime stems from the guns. He believes it's all connected.
Right. Well, you could be killed. So I give him credit. When I was on the show,
I want to give him credit. I want to say stop and frisk. When you have two-thirds of our police, the NYPD police department is minorities. A lot of them went into those areas to reduce crime because crime was high there. Not saying everyone's a criminal there. It's to protect the citizens that live there.
Right.
And that was the intent.
Right.
So instead of just saying, well, I apologize, why not say my intent was to protect people that need the most protection? And the fact that they were minorities is incidental.
Right.
I'm putting them in the neighborhoods where they needed the most help. To me, that's a more realistic answer rather than, wow, I'm 77 and I just sobered up and realized how crazy I was at 70.
No, I resemble your points. I just wished that when he was mayor, because there were a number of people saying, Mayor, this thing is going overboard here. It's a little excessive.
Right.
I just wish he'd been a little more sensitive then. However, we all make mistakes. And here's a guy that's admitted to him. He's probably apologized a little too much for it. It's time to move on. And if you're going to blame somebody, and I'm not blaming Bernie Sanders, but his record on guns in the Senate and the House, maybe one of the reasons some people don't like him, he shouldn't be blamed for gang violence in America. But for darn sure, you can't blame Mike Bloomberg for – you can't attribute him being anti-black or anti-brown or anti-black men because he took a risk to try to reduce gun violence in neighborhoods and communities across New York City.
That's the way I would have phrased it as opposed to I apologize. That he tried to do it in a way in which the policy was already in place. He could even say, it's not my policy. I saw it was working, and I wanted to enhance it.
Exactly.
But that's what he said. When we come back, I want to get Congressman Harold Ford's take on what's going on with the coronavirus. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This message is for anyone looking for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance, even if you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or taking anxiety meds. Here's an example. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe overweight with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term life insurance may only cost about $200 a month. We're Term Provider, experts in finding affordable term life insurance for those that may not be in perfect health. If you've had prostate cancer, heart conditions, high cholesterol, or on prescription medications, you may still qualify for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance. Get a quick quote by calling Term Provider at 800-511-3535. 800-511-3535. If you're looking for term life insurance but have type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, or have other health issues, call Term Provider at 800-511-3535 or visit termprovider.com. Termprovider.com.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro. Pirro's exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these DC insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get Judge Pirro's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280 now.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
Overnight superstar hockey goalie David Ayers makes the Dean's List. In case you hadn't heard, David stepped in as an emergency goalie in Carolina's 6-3 victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs this weekend. And now the Hurricanes are bringing the sometimes Zamboni driver to Raleigh for their game tonight against the Dallas Stars. Brian Kilmeade sat down with David on Fox and Friends to talk about the incredible night he had with the Hurricanes.
If you can come in there and you can play hockey with these guys, no matter what team you're on, anywhere you go, they'll welcome you like they're one of yours, and they'll celebrate just like they've won the Stanley Cup again.
The Hurricanes started selling shirts with Ayers' name and number 90 after Saturday's game. The team says he'll get royalties and that a portion of the proceeds will go to the Kidney Foundation in honor of the goaltender who underwent a kidney transplant in 2004. And by the way, his mom was the donor. Congratulations again, David. You made the Dean's List. Janice Dean, Fox News.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
He was a boy from Oklahoma who captured the hearts of Yankee fans the world over from 1951 to 1968 and helped win 7 World Series titles. On March 1st, 1969, Mickey Mantle announced his retirement from baseball.
To think that the Yankees are retiring my number 7 with numbers 3, 4, and 5 tops off everything that I could ever wish for. I've often wondered how a man who knew he was going to die could stand here and say that he was the luckiest man in the world. But now I think I know how Lou Gehrig felt. It's been a great honor. I'll never forget it. God bless you all, and thank you very much.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
This is House Call for Health. According to new data, it pays to be a doctor. The latest research from the U.S. News and World Report shows the top 10 highest-paying jobs are all in the medical field. Anesthesiologists taking the top spot, making on average more than $260,000 a year. Next are surgeons, followed by oral and maxillofacial surgeons. Obstetricians and gynecologists are tied at fourth place, with orthodontists rounding out the top 5. The other careers in the top 10, psychiatrist, physician, prosthodontist, pediatrician, and dentist. How do these salaries compare to the median annual income? The Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates that number at $49,000. Although the healthcare field is proving to be lucrative, a separate study from the Association of American Medical Colleges shows med school comes at a steep price. The average cost of a one-year in-state school can run you more than $37,000. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
To your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
In the White House today, we have a self-described great genius. Self-described. And this great genius has told us that this coronavirus is going to end in 2 months. April is the magical day that this great scientist we have in the White House has determined. I wish I was kidding. That is what he said.
That is a little bit of the coronavirus. We did not talk enough about that. Amy Klobuchar brought it up, and I thought it was very statesmanlike doing it. But before we get into that, Harold Ford's here with a brand new project that will affect you. It's called RX Saver. It's an app-based search engine that helps patients find, get this, the lowest prescription drugs available. And while we wait for Congress to okay or visit a bill, it's got bipartisan support. This moves in that direction.
Look, legislative fixes for big problems in healthcare sometimes take a while. We've been talking a long time about how to help lower drug costs, and Congress has debated back and forth. There are good pieces of legislation on both sides. But market forces have worked to make this a reality. RX Saver, we're a company that's owned by McAndrews and Forbes. I'm the chairman of. We are a free web and app-based platform that aggregates drug costs from across the country, then localizes it. So if you download the app, wherever you may be standing in the country, it automatically defaults to your GPS location, or you can insert a zip code if you want, if your parents or your kids call, and you write in the name of the drug. You have to have a prescription, obviously, and it will tell you the closest drugstore. And you can select the radius, the amount of area you want to cover. It'll direct you to the drugstore with the lowest cost for that drug. And it's transparency in pricing. And I give President Trump some credit here because he's pushed very hard for that to happen. Then you got Democrats pushing Medicare for all. I think the market forces are coming together, and we are a great example of that, where we are helping consumers today find the lowest cost.
So downloads, so go to your app store.
You go to
RxSaver.
Whatever kind of device you have, and download RxSaver. It's free. And anytime you or a member of your family has a prescribed drug, a physician prescribed medication, put it in and figure out where you can find the lowest cost. It's for people who are paying out of pocket, which accounts for about half of America paying for all their drugs out of pocket all year.
And we're going to talk about coronavirus. Hopefully, the president's presser today will answer a lot more questions. So, Harold, we'll have you back hopefully this week.
Everybody should stop playing politics with this. This is too serious of an issue.
I hear you.
Is back. The award-winning journalist returns with an unflinching look at the border crisis.
What I care about is one thing, the truth.
And she's taking on the mainstream media, tackling the issues that matter to America, one story at a time.
We see this, but we don't ever see where they go.
We don't know what they've been through just to get here. You can see it on their faces.
I know. This is me at my core.
These guys are runners. They're not going to give themselves up.
It's all happening pretty fast. But I guess this is what you're used to.
You okay?
Yes.
They portray us as villains. That's not the case. And we all have families. We're here to protect our borders, protect our country.
Having the freedom to take on tough subjects and tell it like it is, that's what we have at Fox Nation. That's what sets us apart.
No bias. No nonsense. Lara Logan has no agenda. The must-see docuseries is available now, only on Fox Nation. Start your free trial at foxnation.com.
I'm Ashley Dvorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile with Amy Poehler. Poehler is the co-creator of the new Fox series, Duncanville, a new part of Sunday's animation domination lineup. The series centers around an average 15-year-old named Duncan with a not-so-average fantasy life. As for the inspiration behind it all, she says he's not based on anyone in particular, just a relatable experience.
Duncan is kind of based on this idea of that teenage boy experience and, teenage girl experience when you feel like you have all the answers and everything is really frustrating. You have no power and you just want life to hurry up. Like you kind of want to get past this part. So it's really fun to play that kind of energy.
Though part of the mom character does get her cue from real life.
I try to channel my mom sometimes. Annie is a lot more feisty and my mom is not a yeller, but I gave Annie a little bit of a Boston accent so I could just think about my mom, telling me to be careful.
Ashley Dvorkin, Fox News.
Democracy 2020 coverage continues this election season on the Fox News Podcast Network.
We have the best economy we've ever had. With your help on November 3rd, we are going to defeat the radical socialist Democrats.
Subscribe and download now from Washington, the latest news from the nation's capital.
This victory here is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Dana Perino and Chris Steigerwald with I'll Tell You What has you covered. Who's leading, who's trailing, who's right, and who's wrong.
Thanks to you, a campaign that some said shouldn't be here at all has shown that we are here to stay.
Hit the trails with Brett Baer as the candidates take it to the streets. It's the campaign with Brett Baer.
I offer a record of getting things done.
And each morning, the Fox News Rundown takes you beyond the headlines on Democracy 2020. Subscribe, download, listen, stay informed at foxnewspodcasts.com.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1983. President Ronald Reagan.
How they preach the supremacy of the state, declare its omnipotence over individual man, and predict its eventual domination of all peoples on the earth. They are the focus of evil in the modern world.
To ignore the great majority of the American public who enjoys rock music is just pure stupidity.
We had a good supply, and Sunfield's closing now. We'll be with you in a minute.
That's great, Sally.
Our immediate challenge to this atrocity is to ensure that we make the skies safer and that we seek just compensation for the families of those who were killed.
Never again should a black or Hispanic or woman or Jew, because of race, religion, or sex, be limited or inhibited as we grow. The aristocracy is not the limit. The sky is the limit. Our time has come.
News as it happens then.
News as it happens now.
This is Fox News Talk. Is Poll Parade with Fox News Director of Polling, Dana Blandon.
President Trump frequently touts the economy.
Our economy is the best it has ever been.
While we don't have polling to confirm best ever, I can tell you in our Fox News poll, 20% of voters rate the economy as excellent. That's a record high. Just 3% felt that way in the final month of the Obama administration. When we look at the combined number, saying the economy's in excellent or good shape, it's 55%. It's been 19 years since this many felt as positively. Far more say President Trump and Republicans are responsible for the economy than point to former President Obama and Democrats. However, that cuts both ways. Half of those rating the economy positively credit the president. Among those giving negative evaluations, one-third blame him. Findings the president won't tout, a majority thinks the way the economy works is unfair, and nearly 4 in 10 think it'll take major changes to make it fair. I'm Dana Blanton, and that's your Poll Parade.
You listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
On the brink of battle, Kurabayashi watched the sea from his command post, waiting for the attack.
They're going on the toughest assignment of Marine Corps history.
We were all jacked up, you know.
Most of us couldn't figure out why we were taking that wee little place and why we needed so many Marines to do it.
And that is just a clip of the special that was on Sunday on Fox News Channel. It is all revolving around Unknown Valor, the book that I think is number one or number two on Amazon right now, certainly a nonfiction, maybe overall. And it's written by Martha McCallum, and she worked with Ron Drez, who helped me with Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, Miracle of New Orleans. He's a brilliant historian, and he's also a decorated Marine. And Unknown Valor is a story of family courage and sacrifice from Pearl Harbor to Iwo Jima. And Martha, this isn't a story you learned about. This is a story that directly hits home with you.
It does. And it's both. I learned so much working on this book. But the genesis of it were these letters that my mother shared with my sisters and I when we were growing up. That she was very close to her first cousin, Harry Gray. My grandfather was like a father to him because his own father died when he was 12. So they were a very tight-knit, small family. And Harry enlisted after he graduated from high school in Arlington, Massachusetts, went to Paris Island for training, met, you know, a bunch of men who I ended up meeting through the process of writing this book, people who knew him at Paris Island and then who traveled with him on the USS Rochambeau from San Diego over to Guam and then to Iwo Jima. So it's a personal story, but it also was a vehicle for me to tell the story of the home front and the war from Pearl Harbor to Iwo Jima with the help of Ron Drez, who you point out is fantastic.
So is that why you're so patriotic, you think, because you heard about these stories growing up?
I mean, you know, I think, Brian, first of all, I was just moved on a personal level by them. You know, these young men wrote such beautiful, eloquent letters, and they were teenagers. Writing was an art back then, and his goal, and all of the young men whose letters I gathered together in the writing of this book, they wanted their families back home to not worry about them. So, you know, we always think of like the me generation and the selfies and all of that. The focus was not on them. The focus was on making sure that their families back home weren't concerned about them.
Wow.
And basically, you know, there were mortars flying over his head. And he said, you know, don't worry, Mom. We packed our sandbags really tight on our foxhole and we're fine. And the chow is great. And there's plenty of it, you know, just trying to help people keep their spirits up back home.
Why did we need Iwo Jima? What was so vital about the Pacific Theater and that island?
You know, I mean, for many years, after the Spanish-American War, Guam and the Philippines became American territories after the Spanish-American War. And from that point on, I think war planners were aware of the fact that because we were literally in the backyard of Japan, which was such a strong military force at that time, having defeated in the late 1800s Russia and China, and feeling very ambitious under the newly emplaced Emperor Hirohito, there was a feeling that this confrontation could happen. Most people did not think that. Nobody actually thought, except for Captain Billy Mitchell, who, you know, anybody who would listen to, he said that it could be at Pearl Harbor, the first attack. But everybody thought that was unlikely, which is, of course, what happened. So we kind of go back and go through all of that history and learn a lot about the way that the battle was fought. And Iwo Jima is the first of the Japanese islands that are attacked, that are part of the war. So the rest
and
of them
taken.
Yes, and the rest of them were all acquisitions of Japan, right? So they were fighting back from places that they had taken over, Guadalcanal, Solomon Islands, Marshall Islands, Gilbert Islands. But when the fight comes to Iwo Jima, it's home. This is the first time that the Marines are trying to take away a property that belonged, was sacred land of Iwo Jima. It's an 8-mile square island, tiny piece of nothing. You can literally see from one side to the other when you stand on it. But the reason it was so strategically important was that it had two airfields. On all of these islands, the airfields were the main goal, to take over those airfields, take away
get
the
off
ability.
The carriers.
Take away the ability of Japan to use those airfields and to take them over so that when, in this case for Iwo Jima, the B-29s couldn't make it all the way from their positions to bomb the mainland, to soften up the mainland for a potential invasion, which everybody hoped would never happen. But they were doing that. They were in the process of that. But those B-29s, the escorts couldn't take them back and forth because of the way that they were built. So they needed a place to stop over, and Iwo Jima was the most strategically beneficial place. And after they took Iwo Jima, 2,400 damaged planes landed on those airstrips with an estimated 2,400 crew members on them. So what those men fought for in Iwo Jima, they were able to save the lives of the men who used that place for safety.
So part of the great thing about doing the book is, and I was able to do the same thing, you're able to talk to the people and the experts who knew it. So you're talking to people that are still alive. I want you to go, if you can, go to the fourth clip. This is these 75 years later, the survivors wonder why they're the survivors.
75 years have passed since the last days of World War II. Lives have been lived, children and grandchildren born. But when the men of Iwo Jima reflect, they still wonder sometimes why they were spared and others were not.
Well, what we had to do to keep our country free.
So that's one thing they probably wrestled with, right?
Oh, absolutely. Every one of them. That man who you hear there is George Coburn. When I was growing up reading these letters, one of the letters that I read was from George Coburn. He grew up in a neighboring town of Medford, Massachusetts. He and Harry Gray played football against each other. And they knew each other in high school, but, you know, from neighboring high schools. But when they were on the Rochambeau crossing the ocean, they both immediately recognized each other's Boston accents and became really good buddies. In George's words, they were closer than brothers. So George, when I called George, I found him late in the process. I didn't think that George was still alive. And then I went back through a file that had George's information in it at the very end of writing the book. And I found a document where he had requested his military documents. He said he'd lost them in his move from Massachusetts to Florida. And there was an address in Florida. So I hadn't come across this until the very end. So we got his address and I called him. And I said, "This is Martha McCallum. My uncle was Harry Gray." And the phone just went silent on the other side. And he said, "I think about Harry all the time."
Wow. And how old were they then?
Well, they were 18.
18?
When they were in Iwo Jima, yeah.
Wow.
And he's 94 today. He's on his way to the Iwo Jima Association. I talked to him this morning, and I'm going to be with him on Saturday. So.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you got some friends out of this.
I did. Yeah, absolutely.
So here you're talking to somebody who knew your uncle. Before we hear the clip, is this the one where you said they didn't know that they knew him until you used his last name?
I believe this is Charlie Gubish, yeah.
Right. Let's listen. Cut three.
In the 34th replacement draft, is this someone that you recognize?
Oh, yeah. It was my buddy. Gray, I think his name was Gray.
He was my uncle.
He was my buddy, a foxhole buddy. He'd always call me Pop.
He ended up buddy-buddy more with Harry. Thank God we had each other, you know. We were laying in a crater, me and Harry. He gave me a quick hug and he took off. Because that's the night that we had an awful mortar attack. One of them landed right between Harry and the kid next to him. Killed both of them. And I went over and I wanted to kick him, like, why did you do this? You know, don't you know I love you? I never saw him again.
Wow.
So that second voice is George Coburn, who I was just talking about. He's just such a sweet man, and I'm looking forward to seeing him this weekend. The first voice was Charlie Gubisch, and it was interesting because he was someone that Dean Laubach, who is a researcher in Pennsylvania, put me in touch with, because when I was working on the book, I said my uncle was wounded and killed on March 13th, 1945. And he said, wow, that's remarkable, because I know a man who's 100 years old who was also wounded on that same day. There was one major mortar attack on that day. Two people were killed, and Charlie Gubisch was wounded in that attack. And Charlie had been interviewed, and I found, you know, I looked him up after I heard about him, and I found one other interview that he had done on video with a local reporter. And in that video, because I was trying to figure out if they might know each other, in that video, he says, I was with two of my friends. And now, remember, he was, you know, 24 at the time, but he was 100 when he was saying this. He said, one was Herman Grader of Cincinnati, and the other one was a good buddy of mine from Boston. And he couldn't remember his name at that time. So I was like, you know, Boston pricked my ears up right away. So I wondered if it could have possibly been Harry. And then we showed Charlie the picture. And because we had said to him, do you remember someone named Harry? But he looked at the picture, and he immediately, you can see on his face that he recognizes him in a second. And he said, oh, that's Gray, my buddy Gray. Wow. He called him by his last name. And so it all really came together at that point.
And would you, I want to find out what your family thinks about this, because it's not just your story, it's your whole family story. The book is out. It's doing fantastic. It's called Unknown Valor, a story of family courage and sacrifice from Pearl Harbor to Iwo Jima. It's by the great Martha McCallum. I'm more with Martha in just a moment. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Message and data rates may apply.
Come on, one more rep. You got this.
10.
There it is. Nice work, man. You're a beast.
Thanks, man. I feel better than I have in years. And I got to tell you, taking Nugenix makes a huge difference for me.
Nugenix? That's the testosterone booster with TV ads with Frank Thomas. The Big Hurt, right?
Oh, yeah. This is a legit product. The key ingredient is Testofen, which helps boost free testosterone levels and increase lean muscle mass.
Well, it's clearly working for you. Hey, are they still giving out complimentary bottles for people to try for themselves?
Yeah, Nugenix is a great way to increase lean muscle and feel stronger with more energy and endurance.
Man, I need to get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix.
No problem. You just got to send them a text. Text RIP to 42424 right now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. Nugenix samples are not available in stores, so text RIP to 42424 right now. Text RIP to 42424. That's RIP to 42424.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these DC insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get Judge Pirro's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280 now.
This is Fox on Justice. The courts are asked to get involved in pronoun disputes. Red Washburn is a professor of English and Women and Gender Studies at Kingsborough Community College in New York. Washburn is transgender and wishes to be referred to with the pronouns they or them. Washburn is suing in federal court, alleging school officials and colleagues use she and her and Amy, the name Washburn used before coming out as transgender. And also the school eliminated the gender studies curriculum. Washburn claims a hostile environment. In Portsmouth, Ohio, another college professor sued Shawnee State University for a different reason. Nicholas Merriweather claims he was reprimanded and given a written warning because he refused to use the requested pronouns when speaking to a transgender student. Merriweather said doing so would contradict his Christian beliefs and violate his rights of freedom of speech and religion. A judge dismissed that suit. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
I'm Ashley Dvorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile on Ty Burrell. The actor joins Fox's Animation Domination lineup as one of the voice stars of the new series, Duncanville.
Duncanville is about a 15-year-old boy that is willing to do anything to achieve his dreams except try, basically. He is not willing to put forth any effort. He just wants to be famous and rich and be on his phone, essentially. Duncan and his mom are both played by Amy Poehler. I play his dad.
He says the cast and the schedule are part of what led him to this animated world following Modern Family.
I've been thinking long and hard about what the next thing would be, and I want it to still have all of those criteria, and animated really does. You know, it still allows me to be home for dinner, and it's really funny. It's Mike and Julie Scully created the show with Amy. They're all lovely people. It checked all the same boxes.
Ashley Dvorkin, Fox News.
You're interested in it?
Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
24 hours after the battle began, more than 500 Americans were dead and nearly 2,000 wounded.
There was an odor of death on the island.
We thought they were Japs laying on a pile covered with ponchos. And they weren't Japs, they were Marines.
The commanding officer asked me, as the only flamethrower operator left, could I do something about some of these pillboxes that had stalled? My remark was, I'll try.
Wow. What was he saying in that last part of it?
He said, I'll try. That actually is a person whose valor is quite well known. Most of the men in this story are people that, you know, stories that most people haven't heard. That's Woody Williams. He's the oldest living surviving Medal of Honor winner from World War II and the only surviving Medal of Honor winner from Iwo Jima. And he's an amazing person. He'll also be at this event, the Iwo Jima Association 75th anniversary in Washington this weekend. But he was 5'6". I think, and when he first went to enlist in the Marines, he was told he was too short. Sent him back to the farm. He's from Quiet Dell, West Virginia. Big family. Sent him back to the farm, and then as the war wore on, they needed everybody they could get, so they lowered the height requirement, and Woody went back and got in. He was in the area of the second airfield trying to clear out some Japanese pillboxes that were in that area, and he was the only flamethrower left in the group. And so his commander, you know, his captain in the field said to him, you know, see what you can do, you know, and you pick three guys and take them with you, pick four guys and take them with you. So he said he picked, you know, four guys that were around him, and they went out and tried to clear these pillboxes. This, you know, 5'6" guy with an enormous flamethrower on his back. I think they weigh over 100 pounds. And he doesn't know how he did it, but he single-handedly cleared 7 pillboxes. Wow. Of Japanese enemy. And all, I believe all of the men, maybe one of them survived, of the ones that he picked to come with him, all died. It was an incredible, incredible feat. And he still says to this day, he said, I don't remember much of it, and I don't know how I did it.
Amazing. By the way, welcome back. Martha McCallum still here. Unknown Valor, the name of the book. Martha's giving us inside the story that's out. Also, Fox Nation's doing something pretty cool. I know you love Fox Nation, right? So
I
Fox
do.
Nation, if you now order it for a year, you could get a signed book from you?
Yes, exactly.
All right, so you'll sign this and send it out.
Absolutely.
So actually, and we're seeing on Fox Nation, the whole show streams. So you go to find out more about somebody you never met, an uncle
right.
that died during World War II, and you're way younger than that. So you know about this story through your family. What's your family's reaction as you're researching and finding out all this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, my grandfather is also no longer alive, but he had maps in the basement, and he kept a scrapbook. I have a scrapbook that had all the maps of the war, and he used to follow the progression of it all the time. He was very, you know, involved in watching really closely the spread of the Nazi forces across Europe, and then following in the Pacific Theater as well. My mother was the person who shared these letters with me. She passed away 5 years ago, and she was very close to Harry. But Harry's sister is my Aunt Nancy, and she's still alive. She's 89 years old. She'll also be at this event with us on Saturday. And this is her brother, you know, who she loved very much. And so I learned so much from her during this story that I never knew about her brother and about what life was like growing up for them. It was very hard. They lost their father, as I said, and her mother sort of had to step into the role of provider for their family, which she did very ably. And, you know, I think for my children, my son is named Harry after Harry Gray. And I think for the next generation, I hope that this will be, you know, a story that they will learn and know and right. pass along to their children as well. And I also just want to say, I think one of my motivations isn't just, you know, this is a story from my family. That's really a vehicle for telling the whole history of the Pacific Theater. But I would encourage everybody, if you have someone like this in your family, you know, someone who died in the wars, learn their story, because their story ended with them. They didn't get to get married or have children to pass these stories down. So I guarantee for most Americans, there's somebody in their family tree who has a story that could date back to this war or World War I or even the Revolution. Learn as much as you can about them, because it is a journey that will enrich your life.
And it's kind of respect for them and their life.
Absolutely.
Right? Martha, the other thing is, I thought it was interesting in your special, why he picked the Marines. He liked the uniform, right?
Yeah, that's what Charlie Goodrich said. And Woody Williams said the same thing. He thought it would be a good way to get girls because it was the best-looking uniform.
Wow, it was fantastic. Everybody was joined. People were drafted. People joined. They were all on the same page. Now the one thing, I know we went through the Vietnam era with, thankfully I was too young to see it, but I read about it, how the men and women were treated when they came back. I think we're over that, don't you? Don't you feel as though the one thing you could say about what's going on now, so much disconcerting, I don't know anyone who looks at the military and says, get him or her away from me.
No.
I see respect, airplane seats given up.
That's very true.
Thank you. Isn't that a good feeling?
It's a wonderful thing. And I do think, you know, it struck me when Charlie Goodrich was telling me about his return home after World War II. So he gets off Iwo Jima. He goes to Guam. Then he gets sent back to the West Coast. And basically they put them on a train to Chicago. And like once you got to Chicago, you were just sort of cut loose. It's like, okay, find your way home.
Yeah.
He lives in Pennsylvania. So he had to, like, get a ride from someone to get back to Pennsylvania. And then he shared a cab with a couple of guys so that they could get home. He gets home in the middle of the night and, like, knocks on his wife's window and is like, oh, I'm home.
That's it.
I mean, when you think about that, right, and you think about, you know, you're waiting for a plane, right, and they say, like, all veterans, you know, please board first, you know, thank you so much for your service. I mean, it has changed so dramatically, and I'm so grateful for it, and I think that, you know, these heroes were so humble in World War II, and they still are today, but I'm grateful that we give them more open recognition and thanks.
You know, what's interesting is it's the last war, in modern war, where there was clearly good guys and bad guys.
Absolutely.
Because there was really no argument, oh, I'm pro fascist. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a Nazi. I'm a white supremacist. I mean, are you kidding? I mean, you clearly were. They could have worn all black. It would have been accurate. Because even today, the Germans are embarrassed about what happened. They don't even acknowledge it. The Japanese say, we're friends. We turn the page. We don't even want a military. Afterwards, we didn't even let them have a military afterwards.
That's right.
And we went right from that war to the Cold War.
Yeah. And one of the things that's really cool is when I went to Iwo Jima, it was for the Reunion of Honor. You can only get onto the island of Iwo Jima one day a year for about 6 hours. The Japanese open the island. They allow people to come look and, you know, historians, veterans, families. And they have a Reunion of Honor, and it's a ceremony, a memorial ceremony for both sides, Japanese dignitaries in top hats and ties, and Americans on the other side of this memorial service. And they remember on both sides, because both sides recognize how much was lost, you know, tens of thousands of people on that island. And it was a tragedy.
Wow. The name of the book is Unknown Valor, the story of family, courage, and sacrifice. Most importantly, sent by Martha McCallum, and as she mentioned, it's worth noting that it's her story, but it's really our story. The American story, and you have marching orders. She gave them to you. She wants you to follow through.
Thank you.
Download the book. If you're like me, I like to read them on my iPad. But if not, go grab it. You will not regret it. Martha, thanks so much. Congratulations.
Thank you, Ryan.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro Bureau's exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these DC insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get JUDGE Bureau's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280 now.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1977. Criminal Gary Gilmore.
I simply accepted a sentence that was given to me. I've accepted sentences all my life.
By an affirmative vote of a majority of the members of the Board of Pardons of the state of Utah, the death sentence imposed on Gary Gilmore will not be commuted or lessened.
I let the American people down, and I have to carry that burden with me for the rest of my life.
In this hour of sorrow of both Tennesseans, the nation, and indeed around the world, the sadness reflects the talent of one of the greatest talents that this country's ever produced, or maybe this world has ever produced.
News as it happened then, news as it happens now.
This is Fox News Talk.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRostra. Joe Biden scores a much-needed victory in the South Carolina Democratic primary.
En route to victory, Mr. Biden enjoyed African-American support, aided by the timely, influential endorsement of Congressman Jim Clyburn. With supporters, Mr. Biden laid claim to the 44th president's coattails.
We need to build on the coalition and legacy of the most successful president in our lifetime, Barack Obama.
For his part, finishing second, Bernie Sanders concedes nothing, imploring all who feel discontented to join his campaign.
Our job is to grow the voter turnout in America.
Meanwhile, billionaire activist Tom Steyer is ending his presidential bid.
I said if I didn't see a path to winning, that I'd suspend my campaign.
George Bonzani reporting.
As a side note, Obama has not come out in support of Biden or any other candidate. The first victim of the coronavirus in Washington state, a man in his mid-50s with a compromised medical condition. President Trump urging calm, says his administration's tackling the virus.
There's no reason to panic at all. This is something that is being handled professionally.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is banning travel to Iran in response to the outbreak, and it's elevating travel warnings to regions of Italy and South Korea. Most Republicans are focused on the 2020 elections, but possible 2024 presidential candidates made appearances at CPAC this weekend.
CPAC is an event where GOP presidential hopefuls must be seen and heard. For years, candidates have flocked to this annual gathering of conservative activists. No one has officially declared for 2024, but several Republicans have received high-profile speaking slots, including Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Pompeo, and Senator Ted Cruz. Also spotted here was former governor and UN ambassador Nikki Haley. Greg Clugston at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Oxon Hill, Maryland.
This is townhall.com.
Guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking three prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free.
Just pay shipping and handling.
No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free.
Call 1-800-424-7126.
Super Beta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now.
Call 1-800-424-7126.
Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer.
1-800-424-7126. 1-800-424-7126.
Facebook is banning ads that make false claims about products tied to the new coronavirus.
The company says it's removing ads that feature a product and imply a limited supply, thus creating a false sense of urgency in their mention of coronavirus. Ads that guarantee a cure or prevention are also banned. For instance, Facebook says ads for face masks that claim the products are 100% guaranteed to prevent the spread of the virus are not allowed. Facebook had previously banned ads along with regular unpaid posts that peddle fake cures.
Jeremy House reporting. Meanwhile, the ban went into effect this past week, and as the World Health Organization reported, that number of new cases outside China exceeded the number of new infections inside the country for the first time. More at townhall.com. March is crunch time for Democratic presidential candidates.
Nearly two-thirds of the party's national delegates are up for grabs at a 30-day time period, starting with today's South Carolina primary. The biggest prizes come on Tuesday when 1,300 delegates will be at stake in 14 states and American Samoa. If one candidate can emerge from Super Tuesday with a significant lead and the delegate count, it would be very difficult for anyone to catch up. Patrick Foss reporting.
U.S. regulators have proposed fining the four major U.S. phone companies more than $200 million combined for improperly disclosing customers' real-time location to other companies. According to published reports, wireless companies had allowed data brokers to pinpoint the location of wireless devices without their owners' knowledge or consent. You can always check out more on these stories by simply logging on to townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Show will begin in 1 minute. The Brian Kilmeade Show will begin in 30 seconds. Enjoy. News Radio Studios in New York City. Fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Kilmeade at CPAC 2020. Having a great time here. Seeing a lot of lawmakers, impact players. Matt Schlapp, the man who puts it all together at the bottom of the hour, used to work for President Bush. His wife used to work for President Trump. And President Trump will be here on Saturday. The vice president's going to be here in about 2 hours. Yesterday, he got a major... His job title just grew. He's now czar of everything coronavirus related and the government's response. Will he have a chance to do that and campaign 2020? He probably is going to have to put something on the shelf. Let's hope he focuses on the virus. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. What we're suing for is to hold the New York Times accountable for their false and malicious statements that were published on March 27th of 2019.
There you go. Jenna Ellis is leading the charge as the president suing the New York Times. And taking on all comers. This time it's the New York Times. Next time it could be the Washington Post or maybe you. He does not like the quid pro quo story in one of their editorials, and he's going to make them pay for it. Let's see where this goes.
Number two.
I know Joe. We know Joe. But most importantly, Joe knows us. I'm voting for Joe Biden. South Carolina should be voting for Joe Biden.
Hardly a Newt Rockne endorsement, but Congressman Clyburn, with a lot of juice in South Carolina, puts some life into Joe Biden's campaign. Another poll puts more life into his campaign. He's doing well in South Carolina. Not so well in the other 14 Super Tuesday states.
Number one, I believe that the administration's lack of coordination for the coronavirus response is on full display.
He's outright contradicting everything that you all have just said. Outright contradiction.
This is shameful. What he's doing is too late, anemic.
Right, and it's good to see us come together in this time of crisis. The Democrats using the coronavirus to attack the president. Really, one case in Sacramento, 50 people with it, was still ranked number one in terms of handling catastrophic diseases like this. Can we possibly act like adults for once and tackle this together? I guess not. But now it's time for...
Now it's time to clear the airwaves for the Emmy-nominated host.
But I do think we could drop the Emmy-nominated part because I didn't win it.
That's true. Now it's time to clear the airwaves for the Emmy-nominated host of Fox News Sunday.
Mr. Sunday, the receptive voice, the king.
Author of the new book, Countdown
1945. It will drop on June 9th.
The Brian Kilmeade Show celebrity correspondent.
And I'm walking past the spa, and there he is, Paul McCartney. Actually, I have a LeBron James story to tell you.
The connoisseur of compliments.
You have the cutest smile I've ever seen.
How would you describe the color of your eyes? Because they're really quite lovely.
Chris, you're such an asset to the show, and I'm glad to see it's really helping your career.
Did I mention Countdown 1945?
A couple of times.
Now available pre-orders at Amazon.
Got it.
I see this as a feature-length movie. I am serious. This is a great story.
This is going to be great, and I look forward to talking to you for the next 5 months about it.
Every week we are going to talk about Countdown. You know, this is going to be a countdown to the countdown.
I like it.
Tell your people to put that on the promo next week.
The official Brian Kilmeade Show countdown to the countdown continues now.
Chris, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show again.
Well, thank you. And it's always a little bit of a letdown after the big production open. Although I'm going to say this, not going to like it. I think that was simply a replay of last week's, and I kind of am insulted that you guys have kind of let down and just replaying things.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to put somebody on that. I'll find out. I'll put John Durham on it or Michael Horowitz to get to the bottom of it. I'll put an inspector
on your staff. Like a pit bull on a piece of meat. I have to say, I mean, it's never your fault. It's
right.
Always, oh, well, I got to get John around. Speaking of which, has Allison had the baby yet?
No, she hasn't.
Oh, my
or
God.
It's
she's
plural,
about,
you
she's
know.
About 15 months pregnant now.
It's plural, a boy and a girl she's going to have.
Oh, that's right. It's twins. And is she still? Do you still have her working?
Well, this week she's kind of working from home.
Why don't you let the poor girl alone and let her just have her baby?
I have stuff to do.
She's
I have a daily
she
show.
She must... I mean, she is, well, I can't say that because if I say anything about size, I will just say she is very pregnant.
Right. No one doubts her pregnancy. I know you're a reporter, but this is something that didn't need a second source.
No, that's true.
Okay.
I think I can confirm it.
Right. But she wants to work from home because I have a daily show to do. You know, if people's families are going to grow, it can't be on my watch.
Oh, my gosh. No, that's you. You know, people think, oh, he's kidding. No, you turn on people. I suspect there's going to be a call to Allison.
Right.
I don't care about the twins. No. We need a new open for Chris.
This is not like, excuse me. I'm fully supportive. As soon as she wants to go on maternity, I'm fully in support. It's not Mike Bloomberg. That's a Bloomberg organization in 1993.
Oh, my God.
Let's
not go there, for God's sake.
I know. That's what we've been talking about. Chris, you are a moderator. I got to get your take.
Well, let me just ask you one quick question. Are you going to give her the full 4 or 5, whatever it is at Fox, months of maternity leave, or are you going to say, hey, you had the kids, now come back?
3 months a kid.
Okay, that's half a year. Good.
That's why. If you want a year off, have quads.
Okay.
That's a good point. So can we move on?
Yes, sir.
Chris.
Sure.
I know you don't like to be critical of colleagues, but what went wrong with the moderators in that debate? Were they controllable in your mind as someone who knows how to moderate?
Yes. I mean, everybody is controllable. And while on the one hand it's not good for the moderator to take on the politicians, you look kind of like a jerk. It's also not good for the politicians to take on the moderator because they look like, you know, they don't want to... play by the rules, and they look bad versus the others. One of the things I would have said very early on, let me just make it clear. Anybody who raises their hand is not going to be called on. This is not third grade. Don't act like I probably
wouldn't. Wow. You would have said that?
Absolutely. I would have said, you know, maybe not at the beginning, but when they're all sitting there raising their hands and like a bunch of third grade kids trying to get the attention of the teacher, I would have absolutely said that. And I also would have said, your campaign's all agreed. Minute 15 answers. When the minute 15 is up, I've got 6 children. I know how to speak to children, and I've had to. I would have been just like when I'm driving the car and don't make me turn around. Make me stop the car. I would have done it. Absolutely. Maybe I would. People probably would have criticized me. But you couldn't do worse than the criticism that you've gotten from this debate. It didn't serve anybody. It didn't make the moderators look good.
Well, I won't let everyone hear it. Listen to this, Chris. This is as bad as I've ever heard any debate ever at any level for any office. Let's listen to a little of the chaos. We don't have it.
Boy, somebody is going to get chewed out. You know who I blame it on? Allison. Yeah. I mean, she's sitting there. She's munching bonbons while she's 15 months pregnant. You're going to kill her. All right, do you have it now?
Do we have it? Yeah, are we even trying? Right? I mean, is anyone even trying?
This is the real Brian Kilmeade, ladies and gentlemen. This is who he is. He's not the cute guy with the dimples. He's a tyrant.
I am not. I'm showing patience. I thought it was that.
Really?
All right, now let's listen.
Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States, and that's why Russia is helping you get elected.
I think I would make a better president than Bernie.
If you think the last 4 years has been chaotic, imagine spending the better part of 2020 with Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump.
Bernie Sanders' analysis is right. I don't like his solutions.
Bernie, in fact, hasn't passed much.
Okay, that's not the
wrong soundbite, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not the right. Yeah, that was like almost informative. That made it sound like a good debate.
That made sense. You can hear everybody.
I mean, somebody.
My gosh. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen. We need an amnesty program for the producers of the Brian Kilmeade show because he's going to kill somebody.
That is not true.
True. You're a very vengeful person.
All right, so let's try this.
I would like Senator Sanders,
if you get nominated, we'll be relitigating this all year.
Do what I ask.
Look, first of all,
let me go.
We'd ask respectfully if you would all please try to keep to the time.
Good idea. So let's clear this up once and for all.
Okay, I can't even hear it anymore. Chris, I've never heard anything worse, right? I mean, so if that's you.
It's very simple. You just say, stop. Stop. And you bring the debate to a halt, and you say, nobody can hear anything. And I think you shame them a little bit and say, you all sound foolish. Senator Sanders, you go first. Mayor Buttigieg, you go second, whatever. And you let them talk one at a time. But you do have to establish some order. I remember once in a debate in 2016 that with Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz could be difficult. He's argumentative, whether you like his politics or not. And so one of the rules in the Fox debate was if a candidate mentioned your name, you got 30 seconds to respond. So I asked a question, I forget of whom, maybe it was Marco Rubio, and I said, what do you think of Senator Cruz's immigration plan? And he proceeded to answer, but he never mentioned Senator Cruz. So then Cruz says, well, it's my turn. I said, no, it's not. He said, well, I got name checked. I said, you got name checked by me. You didn't get name checked by another candidate. So, no, you don't. And the one thing I would say about this is once you go down that alley, you've got to win. Because if they just roll over you and keep talking, then you have anarchy. So just everybody needs to kind of channel their parents with naughty children and just stop them.
And it was just bad all around, and I think that it was pretty clear that Bernie Sanders getting a little bit of scrutiny. And today's Washington Post, Robert Samuelson did some math because Bernie Sanders doesn't want to on all the spending plans. Listen to this: free college for all, will cost $2.2 trillion, along with cancellation of existing debt, expanding Social Security and other retirement benefits, like he says, $1.4, housing for all, $2.5, eliminating household medical debt, $81 billion, Green New Deal, $75,000 a family, $16.3 trillion overall, Medicare for all, $17 trillion over the course of 10 years, and I've seen that even higher. This is $60 trillion. This is bigger than everybody's budget. When are people going to hold Bernie Sanders legitimately accountable?
Well, some people are trying. I asked him when I had him on the Sunday before the New Hampshire primary, and I did exactly that calculation. And the federal government currently is projected to spend, current spending, and I think a lot of people think there's a lot of spending by the federal government, $52 trillion over the next 10 years. His programs would add another $60 trillion to that. So you would literally more than double federal spending over the next decade. Now, what he always jumps to when you say that is, yeah, but look, in fact, we'll spend less on health care, and that Medicare for all, we'll spend less on health care overall than we will on under the current system. But he never really accounts for the whole deal, which is tens of trillions of dollars in new spending in addition to what we're already doing over the next decade. So it's an absolutely legitimate question, and I don't think he's ever really been held fully to account for it.
I know. You ask him two or three times, and then you have to give up. Tell me, Chris, with all the campaigns you covered, have you ever remembered a party so fearful, fearful of a candidate winning? I know Donald Trump, people say, oh, my goodness, if we win, there's going to be a problem, but no one doubted he was a conservative. And now it becomes clear, even his detractor says he's governing like a conservative. But you have Donna Shalala registering problems, especially with Bernie Sanders continuing to praise some aspect of Fidel Castro's reign. Congressman Clyburn, there's a problem with who has worked with Bernie Sanders before. There's a problem with socialism and his party. You have a fear in this guy, Peter Aguilar of California, saying he's a Bloomberg guy, but he says, I will not back Bernie Sanders. Congressman Cisneros, who flipped a seat, the GOP, is really concerned. Juan Vargas, same thing. You have all these congressmen, from Rahm Emanuel in terms of impact players to James Carville, fearful that Bernie Sanders is going to win. How do you see this game playing out?
Well, first of all, we don't know that he's going to win. I mean, he would not trade positions with anybody else. He seems to be the front runner. After Super Tuesday, he could have a lead of a couple of hundred delegates. And as we've seen, for instance, with Obama and Clinton back in 2008, once you get a lead with the proportional representation that you have in the Democratic Party, it's not winner take all where you can come from behind in a hurry. But you, with proportional representation, you get 55%, I get 45%, you end up with four more delegates than I do. So it's pretty hard to erase 200 delegates. In terms of other campaigns, the answer is nobody really knows anything. So, I mean, yes, there were plenty of people who were saying that you nominate Donald Trump, you're going to get clobbered. They were wrong. There were plenty of people who said you nominate George McGovern in 1972 against Richard Nixon, we're going to get clobbered. They were right. I think he won Massachusetts and D.C. So we could have, first of all, he may not win. And secondly, you could well have a situation where he goes on and wins the presidency. You could have a situation where it's a landslide victory for Trump. And the one thing I would say is this. After so many of us were so wrong about Donald Trump in 2016, it took me 3 years to wipe all the egg off my face. I think a little humility is probably in order.
Absolutely. So, Chris, we look forward to seeing your show on Sunday. We have only 30 seconds left.
Are you in D.C.?
Yeah, no, kind of. Maryland.
Well, you're over at the harbor, whatever it's called.
Yeah, we're at CPAC.
Are you coming to see me?
No, I wasn't really invited. I have a Fox Nation shoot right after this.
Where?
I'm going to be doing the women's suffrage movement because I am for women voting, always have
you
been.
You are,
like, our country
Mr.
Wasn't.
Women's Liberation. That's that when I think of you.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, who's going to be liberated in a very short time?
Who?
Poor Allison, because she'll have 6 months away from you.
He
would
is you Chris
Wallace. Like so gently, 3 months per kid.
We have reached the age where things just cost more.
Cars, mm-hmm. phones, mm-hmm. life insurance.
Your blood pressure is up.
Your weight is up.
You're one to talk.
I have type 2 diabetes, so I'm getting dinged just like you.
Thank goodness for Big Lou.
Big Lou!
Big Lou can get term life insurance rates for a 50-year-old male with type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, or maybe he's on anxiety meds,
mm-hmm.
for just around $200 a month for $1 million of coverage.
Oh, you got to say that again.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll say it. Big Lou and term provider could get a 50-year-old man, a little dinged up, $1 million in life insurance for around $200 a month.
Call Big Lou.
Big Lou!
He's like you. 800-511-3535. That's 800-511-3535.
Don't put it off. If you're overweight, diabetic, have high blood pressure, you gotta call Big Lou.
Gotta. 800-511-3535.
Write it down.
800-511-3535.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these DC insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get Judge Pirro's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280 now.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
A 6-year-old girl sworn in as an honorary NYPD officer makes today's Dean's List. For little Sophia Bartley, meeting with the NYPD's higher-ups was nearly as much fun as her recent trip to Disney World. Sophia suffers from a rare disease that her dad, Brian, says is like a combination of muscular dystrophy, cerebral palsy, and cystic fibrosis all rolled into one. But the Long Island first grader says she was just happy to be there with her NYPD hat and white shirt. She wanted to meet everyone, and during her whirlwind tour, she was made an honorary police officer by NYPD Chief of Personnel, Martin Morales. She was then brought upstairs to meet the NYPD Chief of Department, Terrence Monahan. That was followed by a tour of the NYPD facilities before a sit-down with the commissioner. Chief Morales hopes that the honorary title will help Sophia in her lifelong fight. Congratulations on becoming that honorary police officer, Sophia. You are a real-life superhero. Janice Dean, Fox News.
This is House Call for Health. What you eat really seems to matter when it comes to your physical and mental health. Two new studies back it up. One study looks at the Mediterranean diet, which is heavy on fruits and vegetables, fish, nuts, and olive oil, and light on meat, dairy, and saturated fats. It finds that older adults who stay on the Mediterranean diet for 1 year are healthier, with improvement in their digestive system, brain function, and even how fast they walk and the firmness of their grip. This study is in a British medical journal called Gut. The second study from another British journal, the Royal Society, digs into a typical Western diet, high in fat, sugar, and processed food. Young adults, generally healthy eaters, were tested, but after a week of fast food, these people did worse on memory tests. Plus, the more junk food they ate, the more they wanted. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
In August of 1970, New York attorney Bella Abzug, one of the most outspoken leaders in the growing women's movement, gave testimony on the Equal Rights Amendment.
We felt this transcendent joy, for woman's life has been imminent, as Simone de Beauvoir said. It has never been completely human, because so few of us have had this great experience that all of us have had tonight, of creating in history, of taking the torch from those great women who won us the vote 50 years ago, and carrying that torch high so that it will shine on the lives not only of our daughters, but shines in our own faces in self-affirmation.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. 1-866-408-7669. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to welcome in Matt Schlapp. All he does is keeping the wheels on the on this train, and the train on the tracks, I should say, the wheels on the bus, because he's running CPAC. This morning I was on the stage with him and Senator Mike Lee. We talked about what the challenge is for conservatives right now, and one of which is not being overconfident if Bernie Sanders gets the nomination. Also pointed out that Tim Scott said a warning sign would be the groundswell of support that he has witnessed at Bernie Sanders rallies. As crazy as it is, there's a great big swath of America that really wants to take a shot at socialism. And I think he's worried, as in other people worried, that if Bernie Sanders does emerge, that Donald Trump will feel like, or his supporters will feel like, they got this one in the bag. Let's go out to Terry. Listen, WSKY in Lake City, Florida. Terry.
Good morning, Brian. My question is, the DNC party hates Bernie Sanders so much and accuse him of Russia support, China support. Where is his Steele dossier? Where is the Mueller investigation? Where is the Schiff show on him? Where is the fake news reports on him? This just proves how the attacks on President Trump are targeted on the person and not the interests of the American people. Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, a lot of opposition research is coming out on Bernie Sanders. And the weird thing is, he's kind of embracing it. Oh, the Fidel Castro footage? I actually still like Fidel Castro, and I'm wearing my hair the same. It's bizarre, but that's what we're debating now on the Democratic stage. We've even got Mayor Pete by surprise. Back in a moment from CPAC, Brian Kilmeade.
Candidates.
All of our people are entitled to basic human rights.
14 states.
Progressive is getting things done, and that's what we got done.
Over 1,000 delegates at stake.
Only ways to solve the poverty problem is to get people a good education.
Fox News Democracy 2020 presents Super Tuesday.
The Democratic Party is a progressive party.
Coverage kicks off at 7 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Radio. Listen live on the Fox News app.
We've toiled and triumphed.
We choose to go to the moon.
We pushed mankind to new worlds. We fought for justice.
A turning point in man's search for freedom.
And created common.
Tear down this wall.
But perhaps our greatest achievement isn't thanks to an athlete or an astronaut. It's at the very core of our country. Our greatest achievement is in your hands. Democracy 2020. Fox News. America is watching.
Democracy 2020 coverage continues this election season on the Fox News Podcast Network.
We have the best economy we've ever had. With your help on November 3rd, we are going to defeat the radical socialist Democrats.
Subscribe and download now from Washington. The latest news from the nation's capital.
This victory here is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Dana Perino and Chris Steigerwald with I'll Tell You What has you covered. Who's leading, who's trailing, who's right, and who's wrong.
Thanks to you, a campaign that some said shouldn't be here at all has shown that we are here to stay.
Hit the trails with Brett Baer as the candidates take it to the streets. It's the campaign with Brett Baer.
I offer a record of getting things done.
And each morning, the Fox News Rundown takes you beyond the headlines on Democracy 2020. Subscribe, download, listen, stay informed at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Eight candidates.
All of our people are entitled to basic human rights.
14 states.
Progressive is getting things done, and that's what we got done.
Over 1,000 delegates at stake.
Only ways to solve the poverty problem is to get people a good education.
Fox News Democracy 2020 presents Super Tuesday.
The Democratic Party is a progressive party.
Coverage kicks off at 7 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Radio. Listen live on the Fox News app.
We've toiled and triumphed.
We choose to go to the moon.
We pushed mankind to new worlds. We fought for justice.
A turning point in man's search for freedom.
And created continent.
Tear down this wall.
But perhaps our greatest achievement isn't thanks to an athlete or an astronaut. It's at the very core of our country. Our greatest achievement is in your hands. Democracy 2020. Fox News. America is watching.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Although he was the Speaker of the House from 1971 to 1977, Democrat Carl Albert of Oklahoma served in Congress since 1947. In a 1990 interview, Albert gave his impression of President Harry Truman.
Harry Truman was the least educated president we had in my time, you know. But he had certain qualities that made him an unusual president. He was the most fearless government official that I've ever known. I remember one time some of us went down to talk to him about what we would like to have brought up through the years, and when he got through, he said, "Well, boys, I'll tell you, look at all this stuff," but he had a globe on his desk, globe of the world. He says, "The only thing I'm really interested in is protecting that little globe."
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
This is Fox on Justice. The courts are asked to get involved in pronoun disputes. Red Washburn is a professor of English and Women and Gender Studies at Kingsborough Community College in New York. Washburn is transgender and wishes to be referred to with the pronouns they or them. Washburn is suing in federal court, alleging school officials and colleagues use she and her and Amy, the name Washburn used before coming out as transgender. And also, the school eliminated the gender studies curriculum. Washburn claims a hostile environment. In Portsmouth, Ohio, another college professor sued Shawnee State University for a different reason. Nicholas Merriweather claims he was reprimanded and given a written warning because he refused to use the requested pronouns when speaking to a transgender student. Merriweather said doing so would contradict his Christian beliefs and violate his rights of freedom of speech and religion. A judge dismissed that suit. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
President Trump under pressure to show that he is in command of America's response to the growing international crisis.
I believe that the administration's lack of coordination for the coronavirus response is on full display. We all know that.
Donald Trump, in general, not just with the coronavirus, but in general, doesn't take important things seriously.
He's not he's outright contradicting everything that you all have just said. Outright contradiction.
This is shameful. Puts forth a proposal now that is meager, anemic. What he's doing is late. Too late, anemic.
The thing they're scared to death about in the Trump administration has no idea of what they're doing.
Really? Most of these guys are career professionals, but they were during the Obama years. So yesterday you found out that there are about 54 people that have been affected in the U.S. The disturbing thing, by the end of the press conference the president had, it found out that somebody in Sacramento got it, and it did not appear to have any links to China. We know it's hit every continent, this coronavirus. Except for Antarctica, and I don't want to go there. But I thought the president putting Vice President Pence in charge is a great move. We heard from his entire team. He's trying to calm the markets, but the markets at this hour have already lost 500 points. It's down in the 26,000, so about 10%, and all the gains it gave for this year. Not because of anything America did, not because we're not acting precipitously and preventively. We're doing it where the markets are acting like this because they feel as though they don't have a handle on this and there's no vaccine to be distributed out. The hope is to have it ready and then have it out for next year and be able to stop this thing. China, evidently, according to Axios, the Trump officials were told, don't criticize China. They're going through enough right now. They don't need it from us. To me, I thought the president was totally focused yesterday. I thought asking for $2.5 billion is reasonable. But it didn't stop the critics from coming at him. First off, listen to the president. Cut one.
Of the 15 people, the original 15 as I call them, 8 of them have returned to their homes, to stay in their homes until fully recovered. 1 is in the hospital, and 5 have fully recovered, and 1 is, we think, in pretty good shape, and it's in between hospital and going home. So we have a total of, but we have a total of 15 people. And they're in a process of recovering, with some already having fully recovered.
What I don't get is, at this point, you know, in 6 months from now, if the coronavirus spreads in a way that it seems to be preventable in the middle of an election year, I absolutely see them being critical of the president, like you were critical of Bush and Katrina and President Obama when they had that oil disaster on a platform. Guy got it. But right now, to go out of your way to criticize the president, people just shut you down. Because no, it just shows you, the numbers says you shouldn't be critical of him. We have the best people in the world, and the president's been talking about this from day one, but it doesn't do him any good to say, I am really concerned. I am really concerned about what's going on with this virus. It's not going to help the market. It's not going to help me. It's not going to help you. Here's more from the president. Cut two.
We started out by looking at certain things. We've been working with the Hill very, very carefully, very strongly. And I think we have very good bipartisan spirit for money. We were asking for $2.5 billion, and we think that's a lot.
All right, so he's asking for money. We can lose the soundbite. He's asking for money. These are the people that are going to help. This is how we identify the virus. We're number one in the world in preventing pandemics or dealing with this. But the president keeps on getting hit by his critics in the Senate and the House, like, for example, Pelosi, as well as Chuck Schumer. But the thing I care about most is how the economy is responding, and it's getting pounded because supply chains are definitely affected and they are projected to be affected because nobody is working in China. Hopefully we'll get the alarm bells and people will stop doing manufacturing there to begin with. But the president did miss an opportunity to go after his opponents for a myriad of reasons, one of which was tanking the stock market. Cut 10.
But I think she's incompetent, and I think she's not thinking about the country. And instead of making a statement like that, where I've been beating her routinely at everything, instead of making a statement like that, she should be saying we have to work together because we have a big problem potentially, and maybe it's going to be a very little problem. I hope that it's going to be a very little problem, but we have to work together. Instead, she wants to do that same thing with Brian Chuck Schumer. He goes out and he says, the president only asked for $2.5 billion. He should have $8.5 billion. This is the first time I've ever been told that we should take more. Usually it's we have to take less.
And so far, the economic impact is huge. Travel to Europe is collapsing. Delta is offering waivers on flights to Italy and airlines. If you have a kid that's an exchange student in another country, they're basically coming home because they don't want to be exposed after it turned up in Italy. American universities are canceling studying abroad programs at a dizzying rate, including at American University. Saudi Arabia suspended pilgrimage to Mecca. I believe that's a pretty big deal. So all of this is happening. All of this, it's affecting travel. It's affecting automobiles. And all of it, a lot of it is preventative measures. You have to put somebody in some type of sanctuary. You got to tell them not to go to work. Well, nothing's going to get done. That's the downside of all of it. To me, being that at least we agree the president didn't start coronavirus, this might be an opportunity to pick your spots on when to be critical. And that's what drives Trump supporters crazy. Not the criticism, the stuff that is unwarranted, that is not necessary. There's plenty to criticize any president. 50% of the time he's making decisions that are going to tick people off. But for the most part, you should pick your spots, not be critical of everything at all times. So on Saturday, coming up will be the South Carolina primary. The South Carolina primary right now, according to the latest poll, has it looks like you have former senator, now Vice President Biden, who is in front. Biden, however, has only spent about $100,000 on 14 states, or put $100,000 in on 14 states on Super Tuesday. So his 18-point lead in South Carolina in the brand-new poll is going to be a short-lived high. It's going to let him have a good weekend on Saturday, a good day on Sunday, but by Monday, it's time to fan yourself out and make an impact, and I just don't see it happening. I think after Super Tuesday, two people will emerge, Senator Sanders and Michael Bloomberg. 1-866-408-7669. We'll come back and talk to you in just a second. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Getting past all the rhetoric, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro. Pirro's exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these D.C. insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get Judge Pirro's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280 now.
This message is for anyone looking for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance, even if you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or taking anxiety meds. Here's an example. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe overweight with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term life insurance may only cost about $200 a month. We're Term Provider, experts in finding affordable term life insurance for those that may not be in perfect health. If you've had prostate cancer, heart conditions, high cholesterol, or on prescription medications, you may still qualify for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance. Get a quick quote by calling Term Provider at 800-511-3535. 800-511-3535. If you're looking for term life insurance but have type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, or have other health issues, call Term Provider at 800-511-3535 or visit termprovider.com. Termprovider.com.
We've toiled and triumphed.
We choose to go to the moon.
Pushed mankind to new worlds. We fought for justice.
A turning point in man's search for freedom.
And free to come.
Tear down this wall.
But perhaps our greatest achievement is a thanks to an athlete or an astronaut. It's at the very core of our country. Our greatest achievement is in your hands. Democracy 2020. Fox News. America is watching.
Bill Hemmer reports, weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern.
Moving to the town of Chaldea.
These are complex times. They need to be understood in more than just a soundbite.
We're in central Hanoi, just a few blocks.
When people's lives are affected, it's important to be fast, but it's most important to be right.
Boston is a city in shock.
Information has never moved faster than it does today. It is our job to cut through it.
Bill Hemmer reports, weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, only on the Fox News Channel. Democracy 2020 coverage continues this election season on the Fox News Podcast Network.
We have the best economy we've ever had. With your help on November 3rd, we are going to defeat the radical socialist Democrats.
Subscribe and download now from Washington. The latest news from the nation's capital.
This victory here is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Dana Perino and Chris Steyerwald with I'll Tell You What has you covered. Who's leading, who's trailing, who's right, and who's wrong.
Thanks to you, a campaign that some said shouldn't be here at all has shown that we are here to stay.
Hit the trails with Brent Baer as the candidates take it to the streets. It's the campaign with Brent Baer.
I offer a record of getting things done.
And each morning, the Fox News Rundown takes you beyond the headlines. On Democracy 2020. Subscribe, download, listen, stay informed at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
His mouth to your ears. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's not a Democrat or Republican virus. All the back and forth might be considered to be a virus. The reality is that for the Congress to do anything, it's going to have to be bipartisan. Your next guest is a leader in the Senate on the Republican side, and he and I and other Democrats and Republicans will have to work together. I do believe that what the president asked for, as apparently he now understands, is not going to be sufficient. sufficient now that we don't know that we have a community infection situation, and we have more and more people coming into the United States. So, yes, we're going to need to do more. Also, one of the things that was noted in the California conference call is that the testing kits are really not available. And that's going to be a immediate need.
So that was John Garamondi. He's a Democrat, and he's from Florida, and he actually sounded level-headed because we are in the middle of a global crisis, unless you're out in Antarctica, and we're not. And he sounded level-headed. I didn't want to have Hogan Gidley's blood pressure up too high in the beginning of an interview. Hogan, special assistant to the president and with the press division. Hogan, first off, welcome to CPAC here, number one. It's a madhouse. There's a lot of passion for your boss. They're looking forward to the vice president speaking today and the president on Saturday.
Right.
That's a rare point of view for Democrats when it comes to this coronavirus.
Yeah, it is. And look, the reason the president asked for that specific amount of money is because that's what the experts told him they needed. He said yesterday in the press conference, if you want to give us more, we'll take more. I mean, you know, we're prepared for this at every level. And that's what I think is interesting, the reaction today versus what they were hearing yesterday. A lot of the media didn't even know we had set up a coronavirus task force a month ago. The president did this and directed Secretary Azar and Ambassador O'Brien to lead it. He added Mike Pence to it yesterday. Brilliant move to prepare, and unprecedented moves by this president when he canceled flights from China. We made sure that people coming into this country were taken to airports that had the bandwidth to screen them when they came in from these infected countries. We talked about coming up with a vaccine months ago. We're way ahead of this from a development standpoint. And the media was stuck on impeachment. They didn't want to cover any of this. In fact, we were mocked and derided and ridiculed when we came up with the coronavirus task force because they said it was xenophobic and racist because we didn't want people coming in from other countries. That's not what this is about. It's about protecting the American people, making them safe and healthy. This isn't a time to play politics. It's a time to work together to ensure that this is contained and it is mitigated if it begins to spread. And that's what we're focused on, and we've been focused on it. And as the president said last night, we are ready.
So your press conference last night was put together for what reason?
To explain to the American people just all the resources we had in place, and quite frankly, because the media was wasting time on other things that were just purely political and had no real impact on real American lives, we wanted to show them to the American people without the filter of the mainstream media, folks, we're ready. We have a team in place with decades of experience in this
right.
very thing, and we have been doing things behind the scenes now for months in preparation for this.
So Jen Psaki, a former Obama official, said this, cut 35.
I think the problem, if you look at the press conference last night, is not that they went out and said something. That's ultimately a good step. But you need it to be accurate and consistent. And what people should expect is for their government to be prepared. And now you may have some of President Trump's supporters out there thinking that banning flights from Asia is going to help save them, not cleaning their hands, washing their hands, and making sure they're coughing into elbows and staying home if they're sick. That's a problem. And that's not a political problem. That's a problem of leadership from this White House.
I don't even know.
I don't even know what that means. I have no idea.
Did the president not say to wash your hands?
Absolutely. And in fact, he told a story about someone he had just talked to recently who came up to him and had the flu. And he was like, wait, and he had to go wash his hands. And he said, everyone knows I love to wash my hands because I see so many people and talk to so many people. Treat it like you would treat the flu. When it's around, you want to be careful. You want to be cognizant of the fact that people carry germs. And that's just an obvious thing. And he said that last night, and so did the team. But also, when you go to the website and you see all the information we have there that we've been building out, as I said, for months, as soon as that task force was built, we went right to Congress and briefed Congress. Then they held regular press briefings on camera almost daily with members of the media to let them know about what was happening and where this was moving to and the responses that we had in place and mechanisms we had prepared to take this head on. And they still act like we're not doing anything or we're not doing enough. It's just insane. Look, whether this is Russia, whether it's Kavanaugh, whether it's impeachment, and now it's this. It's just another thing they can try and attack this president with. But the American people see we did nothing wrong in those instances, but we're doing everything right in this one.
Well, when you saw that debate on Tuesday night, the president said the chaos. He said the chaos that was in that debate is playing a role with the market dive. Do you concur?
Sure. Look, when this president came into office and so many on the left made the prognostication that he would ruin this economy irrevocably. It could never come back from the lows that we would see. And the exact opposite happened. He said last night it shot off, like a rocket ship. And it's because we did everything differently than the Barack Obama administration, which saw, anemic growth at best. So now when the markets take a look at some of these Democrats and some of the plans and proposals they have that would absolutely reverse all of the gains that we've seen under the President Trump's administration, his policies, if they reverse that, of course I'd be a little concerned if I were a big investor to see what some of the Democrats are offering.
Now, how can you bring us inside the talks of trying to keep people optimistic and not panicked? And also try to steady the markets while being accurate. This might be more pressure and more vital for the communications division of the White House than any other issue, bar none.
Absolutely. And part of the problem for the communications division inside the White House, as you know, is that we don't have a complicit and compliant media like the Democrats have. So whenever we take a message out there, they do everything they can to twist it and turn it. One of the reasons the president added Mike Pence to the team, the vice president.
So is it to lead the team?
It's to take a leadership role in the team to kind of funnel everything, because he handled an outbreak in Indiana as well. And he has he did it flawlessly and received praise on both sides of the aisle for what he was able to accomplish. He understands this. So when you put that mentality together and the way he was a congressman for decades as well, and he can work with people on the Hill too, it's a perfect marriage of experts in the field, of our Secretary Azar as well, who understands his role, and then you bring in Mike Pence, who has done this at a local level, and ultimately this is going to be localized, because the governors are the ones who are going to have to bear the brunt of this. If it were to spread, it's going to impact communities directly, so we need that aspect as well.
What can you tell us about the case in Sacramento not linked to China?
I can't tell you much.
Okay, I want you to hear what Mike Bloomberg said is the problem on his town hall last night. Cut 12.
It's number one, he fired the pandemic team 2 years ago. Number two, he's been defunding Centers for Disease Control, so we don't have the experts in place that we need. I hope he's right that the virus doesn't come here, that nobody gets sick. That would be a wonderful outcome. But the bottom line is we are not ready for this kind of thing, and the president is not a scientist, is a nice way to phrase it, doesn't seem to believe in science. We are as exposed to this kind of thing as we've ever been, probably more so.
So we can just end it right there. Hogan, your response to Bloomberg?
Well,
have you cut back the budget?
No. In fact, we increased it. I mean, anything to the contrary is just ridiculous. But Mayor Bloomberg isn't a scientist either. He doesn't know what we're doing over there. And every time we come forward like we did yesterday and outline an actual plan and showcase the mechanisms we have in place to deal with this head on, he acts like they don't exist. Look. He's running for president, okay? And that's fine. I can't talk about campaigns. We all know
that. But in terms of cutting the budget, did you guys cut the budget?
No. In fact, we increased it. Absolutely. I think it's $135 million or somewhere in there. But we are very aware of the potential for this virus to spread. The president said last night that he thinks it's going to be contained. If it does spread, we want to be mitigated. We understand how this is going to how this is going to affect the American people. So from our standpoint, the more we get out there and explain to those families and all those American communities and neighborhoods across this country, the better we think this will go.
The president's message on Saturday will be a typical rally to the people here at CPAC.
Well, look,
speech written, not that it matters.
Well,
he rips a little.
Look, this crowd's going to get a show. Let's be very clear, but this is a time for the president to not talk about the promises that he made. It's time to talk about the promises he's kept. And he has a record that I'd put up against any president in history. And, in fact, when you see the massive successes he's had in the face of all this negativity, this crowd's going to love every minute of it, because he's going to remind them about all we've been able to accomplish.
Hogan Gidley, do you agree with Lou Dobbs that he's a better president than George Washington? Yes or no? Answer the question.
I think Donald Trump is the best president I've ever seen in my lifetime, without a doubt.
In your lifetime?
Without a doubt.
He predated you. How dare you duck the question?
I'm not ducking it. He founded the country.
Oh,
even President Trump will say, maybe he's a little bit better.
Lincoln was pretty strong, too.
That's true. Lincoln was good, too.
Yeah, it was a lot harder than the Kavanaugh situation, the Civil War. Hogan Gidley, great to see you. Enjoy your fans here at CPAC. And best of luck, obviously, for the whole country with the coronavirus and how the president's handling. Thanks, Hogan.
Thanks so much.
Keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro. Pirro's exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these D.C. insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get Judge Pirro's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280 now.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Baltimore Orioles shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., the Iron Man, broke the record for most consecutive games played, 2,131. The record had been held for 56 years before that by Lou Gehrig.
Well, you know, I see myself as someone that was very lucky and had a good career, and I think that I'm pretty good. I mean, I don't put myself all the way down and not think that I've had a pretty significant career. I've enjoyed being in the presence of all the great players and this collection of players. I sat and talked to Henry Aaron a long time and really enjoyed talking to Kirk Gibson and Pete Rose. I just enjoy being in the environment. Maybe when I get older and you start to look back, you may have a historical view of your career. But right now, I just see myself as a guy that was lucky enough to play baseball for a long time.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.